Be back next week with more of the biggest songs in rock, plus songs handpicked by me for you. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
We'll see you next weekend on the Sideshow Countdown.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, Peter Werby is not here tonight. He's actually got the night off, but we may be hearing a little guest appearance from him later, because this radio station, friends, turns 40 years old at midnight. And guess who has been on this radio station since that very day? Well, that's right, Peter Werby. So I find it just kind of weird to be here without him on this very important anniversary that is about to happen. But I have to say, quite honored to be the one sitting behind this microphone tonight and doing the Night Call show, as I always do when Peter's gone. He's my co-host. We do this thing together. We'll be back together again next week. I'm going to start out the show, and please feel free to call and just stay on hold for a bit, 313-298-WRIF or 313-298-9743. I have a guest I want to get on the phone right now, someone extremely important to the show and has been for a long time, and someone who has just returned from Egypt. Yeah, believe it or not, a long way to go over there. It's Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, one of the founding members of Code Pink. Medea, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on. And we always make you stay up late for our interviews, but it's so important, and we appreciate everything you do. I know it's a kind of a 24-hour thing for you. Code Pink is one of the leading, peace organizations in the United States and in the world. And Medea, you headed over to Egypt in the midst of 3 weeks of absolute craziness over there. You were there before Mubarak resigned. Tell me how it was. You were there last week?
Well, yes, when the uprising began, and it was quite incredible because we were staying in a hotel that was about a block away, literally, from the square. So we were there morning, noon, and night, and watched as things went from violent in the beginning, very scary, to peaceful takeover of the square by just hundreds of thousands of people, and watched the police kind of disappear, the army be tamed by the people, and it's not often you get to see a revolution in the making. It was quite extraordinary.
I bet. That just gives me goosebumps to think about it. It's a look. The one thing that I thought about, the main message, is look what the people accomplished. And it had to have been just an amazing feeling when they when he finally resigned. So describe, because I understand the mood of the people when things had calmed down. It was kind of a mood of celebration because they felt change coming.
Well, I think, you know, there were a lot of people who experienced the violence in the first couple of days. And that hardened their determination to say, we're going to see this through to the end, that if Mubarak thinks that unleashing thugs against us, having snipers shooting down on nonviolent people in the middle of the night, sending in the cavalry with horses and camels, having the state TV talk about the protesters as the ones causing the violence, you know, if he thinks that is going to deter us, then he doesn't understand the depth of our commitment. And that made people really hunker down and say, we're not leaving till he leaves. And that might mean that I have to die right here in this square, but I'm going to do it because I love my country and I've been silent for 30 years and I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So quite amazing, awe-inspiring determination of people to say, we're not sure what this is going to take, how long it's going to go, how many of us are going to die, but we're going to do it.
The Egyptian people were and are amazing. When you're over in countries and situations like this, Nadia, I know you've been all over the world. How frightened are you?
Well, when I was stopped at gunpoint at a roadblock and four unknown guys got into our taxi and said, we're taking you to some unknown place, that gets a little scary.
Oh, yeah. Were you wearing
tape? On the street and you get my colleagues were held overnight, 12 hours blindfolded. Another colleague was tear gas beaten up, shot at with rubber bullets. I mean, it was scary.
It was scary. It sounds and hairy. Now, do you think these people know who you are? I mean, you know, you are known around the world, and you wear pink. They can, and you know, they recognize you probably from television.
Well, we were on the television in Egypt on the Al Jazeera station that was going live because we went into the square very publicly with signs saying solidarity with the Egyptian people. And then when we walk along the street, people would say, oh, yeah, we saw you on television. So, yes, that made us more of a target. But I must say that all foreigners were targets. All journalists were targets. The message was out there from the state television and Mubarak that this was being instigated from abroad. So when we would get stopped in the street by some of these thugs, they would start yelling at us in Arabic and in some broken English, you know, you're the ones causing the problem. You're the ones that are instigating this. You're the ones that are pushing people to stay in the square. And there was a lot of anger that was taken out on foreigners, including ourselves.
Yeah. That's scary, but it's so appreciated what you do, Medea. While you're there, do you hold meetings? Do you get together with special groups? Or how do you organize something in Cairo?
Well, one of the things we did was to put out to our list that we wanted to take flowers to people in the square. And we got a great response from people, and we went and got the flowers. And on the days previously, we were trying to take things like food and blankets and medicines into the square, and the police or the thugs, if they catch you with that stuff, will take it away and maybe beat you up and maybe take you, arrest you, so you never know. So we took the flowers walking towards the square with great trepidation, made it inside, and had just an amazing reception with people clapping for us and putting us on this big stage where you look out into the sea of people and then throwing out flowers to people. That was quite beautiful. And then we would also go and visit with people in the offices. For example, we went to one office that was a legal center for people to help them when they got arrested by the police. And that office, the day we went in, we had a nice meeting with them. The next day we heard that 13 of them had been hauled off, their office destroyed, their computer smashed up, and so when we went back a couple of days later, it was a totally different scene. We are now in the process of trying to help them by getting some new computers, but yes, it was a wild 2 weeks.
I should say you were there for that long. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Weren't you heading over to Gaza originally?
That's right, and the exact same dates as this revolution. So something was meant to be, and a lot of people, when they found out what was happening, decided not to go on the trip. But others felt, wow, this is amazing. No matter if we get to Gaza or not, we're going to experience something extraordinary, and they certainly did.
Absolutely. Now, was there some kind of block that aside from the situation in Egypt, was there a situation where you couldn't get to Gaza, or was that something?
Well, yes.
Okay.
The part of the delegation did try to go to Gaza, and you have to drive through the Sinai. There was a big uprising happening at the Sinai, and then at the border itself, the closest town called Rafah, there was a very violent struggle going on there. And at the border, the Egyptian authorities had just literally disappeared, so there was a big you couldn't get across. The group waited a couple of days to see if things were going to change, but until now, that border is tightly sealed and nobody is going in and out. So it's been really worse for the people of Gaza. Hopefully in the longer run, it'll be much better and the Egyptians will open that border, but up till now, ever since the uprising in Egypt, the border has been sealed shut.
Yeah. Well, we're always hoping for the best for the people in Gaza, especially on this radio program. Now, the people in Egypt are certainly elated at what has happened, but what the people, I think, are also afraid, would you say, of what's next? What did you get from, I'm sure you've spoken with some of your colleagues over there since he resigned.
I think that people in this country have been given a very false impression of things like the Muslim Brotherhood and the likelihood that they would come to power and that Egypt would become an Islamic state. The Egyptians I talked to are not worried about that at all. They feel that the Muslim Brotherhood is one player among many, that Egypt is not, the Egyptians are not interested in having an Islamic state, and that this is being hyped up in the West to make people fear what is going to come in Egypt. But the people I talked to felt like they're going to have to keep the pressure on to make sure that the army does make a transition to a civilian democratic system. But they feel at this point just totally excited about what they've accomplished and the possibilities for real change.
Oh, that's good. Now, you are living in D.C. these days, correct?
Yes, I am.
And did you go to Congress after you got back? Did I read that right? Have you been shaking your hand at them, raising the fist?
There was a hearing the day after I got back.
Yeah.
It was to talk about Egypt and how this was going to affect the region and U.S. policy. And it was so disappointing to go from the elation of a people who have overthrown a 30-year-old dictatorship propped up by the U.S., and to not hear one of those people in that congressional hearing say, we want to express our congratulations to the people of Egypt. Nothing like that. It was all, we've got to make sure that the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't come to power, and what are we going to do to stop that from happening? And it was all about U.S. interference, all looked at from the point of view of some what I would consider misplaced notion of what U.S. national interests are,
instead
of really looking at what this means to 80 million people.
Right, absolutely. Really, just sad. I, Give us your contact information, because I think everyone should head on over to your website, where I visit quite often to see what you're up to, Medea Benjamin.
Well, that would be wonderful. There's codepink.org, and I'm also associated with Global Exchange, which is globalexchange.org. And there's information on the Code Pink site of things that we think people should do to be in support of the Egyptian people, to be pushing our Congress not to interfere, and other actions that I think we'll be taking in the coming weeks according to how the situation unfolds. And, of course, there might be some really interesting support that we can do for other people that are trying to overthrow their dictatorship. So I would suggest people sign up to our weekly alerts at codepink.org.
I have done that very thing. And I want to remind the listeners, because a lot of our listeners who are regular listeners already know who you are, Medea, but you were here during the U.S. Social Forum, and we buried the pink Hummer. And speaking of flowers, you took flowers to Cairo. You brought flowers here and planted them in that pink Hummer. And someone just reminded me and sent me another picture of it the other day and thanked us. So I want to thank you from that listener for coming and being a part of what was a really, really amazing week here in Detroit.
Well, wonderful, and I hope when the winter's over, someone will go and replant some flowers in that Hummer, because it really looks much better as a flower pot than as a vehicle.
You've got that right. And, you know what, I'll tell Peter, and we'll try to put something together. We'll go plant some.
Oh, that'll be awesome. Okay. Terrific. And please give my love to Peter.
I absolutely will, Medea. Thanks once again, Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, and yes, of Global Exchange as well. Thanks for all your hard work, and you know we'll be talking soon.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye-bye, Medea. And, yeah, definitely check out codepink.org and globalexchange.org. Medea has been a long time. Well, she co-founded Code Pink and Global Exchange for a very long time. And she just hops around the world and spreads her feelings of peace and her hopes for peace and just lovers. So that was wonderful. So if you'd like to chime in on Egypt, I know, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. That was yesterday's news. So we can always move on. We can talk about the fact that, yes, WRIF, this amazing, legendary radio station has been on the air. At midnight, it will be 40 years. And Peter Werby here for all of them. A long, long time. Now, I thought we'd also talk a little bit about Valentine's Day and the political and religious origins, all the different theories on how that started. And maybe some of you, you know, single folks, you haters of Valentine's Day will like that a little more. 313-298-WRIF. It's 313-298-9743. A couple of updates on medical marijuana. I've got some crazy train news, including people I consider to be crazy. One of those, not Scott in Westland. He's not crazy. Scott, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi, Jalene. And actually, I guess I'm sort of exalted to be able to say that I've been listening to WRIF since 1971.
Right on.
And since they're defunct, I guess I can mention them, that back in the day, there was an underground radio station called WABX.
Yes.
Which was, you know, really started the whole thing of underground radio, so-called album-oriented rock, mm-hmm. you know, in Detroit. And actually, WRF was an upstart. But, yes, I'll testify that it's all good.
Testify! Testify, Brother Riff.
But actually, I've been listening to WRF since about 1971, since they started out.
Yeah. Do you remember Peter back in the early days?
Yes.
And be nice. Well, we have to be
actually,
nice.
Actually, I wish I was here, because the next thing I was going to say, I was going to get serious with you.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about the Suez Canal.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And speaking of Egypt.
He's the brainiac that would be able to tell us exactly how long there's been a Suez Canal.
He can tell us all of that. He pulls the
About 1906. Yeah. And so that's in Egypt. And actually, who's the custodian of the Suez Canal?
Well, you know that Mubarak made huge amounts of money working deals with the Suez Canal. The guy is a billionaire. He's estimated, his family is estimated somewhere between $40 and $70 billion.
Well, yeah, and actually, the hilarious thing, the hilarious fact that I've heard from Celebrity News is that actually he owns property, like, on in Beverly Hills, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, like, you know, if he has to skip out from his, you know, pyramids there at the Cheops, you know, of Egypt, he can always move back to Beverly Hills, and there's something waiting for him there.
There's big money in Beverly Hills, that's for sure. All right, Scott. Well, thanks for calling, and thanks for listening all of those years. Have a good
one. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Scott from Westland, and anyone can call 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. What do you think about what's going on in Egypt and here at home, as well as President Obama set to present his budget cuts, as the Republicans have gone way beyond that, $100 billion. Let's go to Florida, where Mike is standing by in Bradenton, and he wants to talk about what's doomsday cults. What's up?
Doomsday cults.
Yeah.
How you doing, Julie?
Good. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. It's nice weather here. Very nice. I'm having a,
you're lucky. What temperature is it?
It's like, well, I guess it's like in the 70s.
Oh, you know, we're not going to be too far off from you. It's going to be a little bit balmy here in the 40s this week, so we're not feeling so bad right now.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. I'll be home on the 20th anyway, so I'm not looking forward to coming home.
Oh, that's right. You're from here. That's right.
I'm from here. That's right. Yeah, there's this guy by the name of Harold Camping. Like, he has this radio station called Family Radio or something here in Florida. I guess they're all over, and he's also on TV, and he's been promoting this. I mentioned last week he's been promoting this idea that supposedly May 21st is Judgment Day or something.
Oh yes,
or it's a return.
Yes.
Supposedly he made some statement years ago, back in 1994, that Jesus Christ was supposed to return in 1994, and he never came.
Oh, yeah. And, what happened there? I wonder.
I don't know. I can't believe people still follow him. Like. And the thing about it is, people. One guy called into his program, and he says, "Well, I feel suicidal because the Lord's coming in. I'm not prepared to face judgment and all this stuff." It's like he's getting. It's like I can't believe people buy into this crap.
It boggles the mind. It truly does, but. You know, I have a theory. I think some people need that, and they need that affirmation, or they need that outside thing to help them get by. I don't know. I don't understand
it. I guess that's what it is. But the whole idea of predicting making a certain date. I mean, like, well, where does he get off on, you know, making a certain date, like, you know, for all these things to happen?
Yeah. Where does this come? I'm sure that God told him, right? Isn't that how it goes?
I guess.
I mean, you know, God told George Bush to go into Iraq.
Yeah, God told George W. Bush to go to Iraq.
Yeah. He did, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for calling from beautiful Florida. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, it looks like we have a call. Someone wants to comment on Code Pink, and I think it's the exact opposite of everything I've been talking about, which is fine. That's what the show is about. We talk about it all. We lay it all out, and we communicate. Pat in Toledo.
How's it going?
Excellent. How are you?
Hey, I just wanted to tell you why I was listening to her. I was sitting here on the computer reading some things about Code Pink, which, yeah. You know, what they did in Cairo is great. You know, that they threw out Mubarak. That's fantastic. Now, hopefully, on verse of what she said, though, with the Muslim Brotherhood, they are Code Pink and the Muslim Brotherhood have ties with Hezbollah.
No,
Code Pink.
No.
Now listen, I'm reading it right here on the AP, the most liberal blog in the world.
I don't think it's the most liberal blog in the world by any means, but that's another argument.
Okay, I'll say this. They're one of the worst journalists in the world. I'll say that.
Who are the journalists? AP?
That,
the Associated Press?
Yes.
Okay.
It says right here.
Wow. Who's the best journalist?
Code Pink has teamed up with Hezbollah. Code Pink in America is for women's empowerment and women's rights, the freedom of speech and anti-war and all this in America. But here, Hezbollah claims right here with Code Pink supporters of women strapping bombs and children to their chest and blowing up. Come on. How can an American
It's not true. It's not true.
And, no, it's not true. It's even Barack Obama in 2008 cited it.
No, it's not true. Listen, I'm a member of this organization, and I'm proud to be a member of this organization, and I don't condone anything like that. And I don't, Medea Benjamin is all about, no, my name's Julene. Okay, here's the deal. Code Pink is an organization that is about promoting peace. Now, I know a lot of people get their panties all up in a wad, especially people on the right side of things, which I don't mean correct. I mean the right wing, which I am assuming you're a Republican, right?
No, actually I'm not. You just said earlier when she was like, oh, we're going to Gaza. And you're like, yeah, we really need support over there.
Well, it depends on how you feel.
Why do you need support over there?
It depends on how you feel about Gaza. I'm concerned for the people of Gaza. They live under horrible conditions, and I'd like to see it better. For a better way of life. Excuse me. I'd like to see a better way of life for those people. And a semblance.
What people?
The people of Gaza. The Palestinians.
What religion are they?
What, you tell me.
I know what they are. I want to hear you say.
What are they? You tell me.
They're primarily Muslims.
Well, so what?
Okay. Now, let me ask you.
Do you have a problem with Muslims?
I have a problem with the 343 men that I serve with. Died because of the hands of the Muslim faith.
No. These were extreme Muslims.
You're right.
These were the extremists. The extremists are only a blip, 0.00001% of the Muslim population. And so, you know,
Iraq and Afghanistan and Armenia, that it's just a blip. That it's just a little blip, or the counterinsurgency, that it's just a blip. You know, I understand. You have every free right in the world to believe in who you believe in.
Thank you.
But don't go tout on American airwaves that you support, that you're a member of these people.
Yeah.
They're killers. They're not.
No, they are not killers. Okay, you're done. That's it. They're not killers. They haven't killed anyone. The extremists have killed people. Medea Benjamin is not an extremist. She's a lovely lady who's doing good things in the world, and I only wish I could do as much as she has done. We'll be right back on Night Call on WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Getting across town to a job interview is stressful enough without being late. But the GPS on my cell phone guides me right where I need to be with no problems along the way. I want the same thing when I do my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step, and calculations are guaranteed 100% accurate, so I know it's done right, which helps me reach my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Accurate calculation and maximum refund money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
And now here's another tax tip from TurboTax. While college tuition costs can add up fast, the deductions and credits can add up too. That's because this year, the American Opportunity Credit for college tuition is up to $2,500. This amount is available for all 4 years of college and for each student in your family. It even covers the cost of books. To find out more about how TurboTax can help you get the maximum refund you deserve, visit us online at TurboTax.com.
Is it time for a new roof? If the roof on your house is old, weathered, or in need of help, you can save $500 if you call Sears Roofing right now. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Call right now and you can save $500. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So call Sears Roofing and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Hello? Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicapped parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's Housing Discrimination Hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Does your furnace need repair? Does your house need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to top-rated remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. It's easy and it's free. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
If you think of yourself as a technical person and want to pursue a career in technology, get started by calling ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. Thousands of graduates have launched new careers after attending the ITT Techs nationwide. Classes and day or evening courses meet at convenient times and teach skills used in the workplace. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career services are available for graduates. Make a technology degree program part of who you are. Call ITT Technical Institute for more information. Call right now. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
Peter Werby gone tonight, but he'll be back next week. And WRIF turning 40 years old, the 40th anniversary, in less than one half hour. And got to tell you, it's been an honor to be a part of this show since 1998. Peter and I here, and producing here for Peter. Then we were syndicated, and but Peter's never left. He's been here the entire time. And I'm really hoping, I put a little bug in his ear to give me a call at midnight as we celebrate the anniversary. It's going to be a big day here. It's been a great week full of interviews. If you've been listening, a lot of old interviews and a lot of the DJs who used to be here and the DJs who are still here. And wow, just a real honor to be a part of this radio station and a part of a radio station that allows this side of the coin, which is, you know, when you look at talk radio or the media in general when it comes to political talk shows, 95% of these shows, at the most, or at the least, I should say, lean to the right and way to the right if you consider faux news over there. So for a radio station like this in a really cool town like Detroit to keep this going for 40 years is astounding. And we have nothing here but the ultimate support from the management and everyone here at Greater Media Detroit. So we are appreciative of that. Taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. We have some open lines, so give me a call. You can come up with whatever topic you'd like to come up with if you want to talk about the origins of Valentine's Day. I'm even going to bring a somewhat activist twist to Valentine's Day here in a little bit. But a couple of you are waiting on the line, and it looks like Carl has been waiting the longest, so we'll take you. Hi, Carl. Carl in Armada. Welcome to Night Call.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, all kinds of things. You tell me.
Well, I've been listening to the show for about as long as you've been on, since back in 98.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, the only thing I don't like about the riff is your guys' show.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, and happy birthday to you, too, when you have a birthday. Okay. Rodney in Ann Arbor. Rodney, welcome to Night Call.
Well, happy birthday in a happy way.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
But it was Tom from Toledo, the guy before the last guy, that really cranked me up and made me call.
Yeah, know? It was like Pat. I think it was.
They piss you off and you got to get on the phone, right?
Yeah, you know, I thought there would be more phone calls about that guy. Usually there are.
Who was that? Stanley from Toledo, the war pig?
That was Pat, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Well, the thing is, he said about the Palestinians are all Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about that. I think predominantly they're a mix, and I think they're mostly Christian.
Yeah, there's
a mix. Positive.
Right.
Now, they've been oppressed by, you know, who next door there, and they can't get a country going with their wall and all, but, you know, we need to face them issues. But the thing is, let's have Palestinians in Dearborn and all calling and say, what are you? Are you Muslim? Are you? I think they're Christian, at least 50%, believe it or not.
I'd like to hear from some Palestinian.
Yeah, there's got to be some rock and roll.
You know it. They call the show. I know it.
Out there. Come on. Talk.
Yeah, yeah. What's up, dear boy? 313-298-WRIF. Yeah,
Hezbollah, he's going into them, and I know he's in the war, and, you know, you got to pick a side, but these guys are giving people food that their home's just been bulldozed.
You know,
I mean, they're the hero to these people.
That's
and
right.
And it's sad. There's no other, you know, there's no scud. You know, there's nothing to fight back, you know.
They don't have it. They don't have the capacity.
You know, probably give them stuff just to fight, to throw over the wall, to make it a fight, you know, to go in there. Come on, you know. We got to look at the real picture and get the real news, you know.
And, you know, Aaron, who answers our phones here, served as well. And he said he bets he served in more of a capacity than that guy. And from what Aaron has told me, he has definitely been in it, in the trenches, as they say.
Yeah, and religion, you know, if you look at it, you know, I'm not being anti-religion, it separates, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, all the wars in the name of religion and so much.
Yeah, well, the Americans, we got it all here, but, you know, Palestinians, let's have them call. There's Christians, there's Muslim, and there's probably atheists, too, you know, and just as Israelis, they're not all Zionists. I'm sure they go every which way.
Hey, so leave the atheists alone.
Well, let's just be open-minded. You know, it's possible, but it's possible. But let's not, you know, it does separate. You know, I just want people to look at that. Let's have some people call in. And then maybe we can talk about more than the Middle East. We can get on, like you said, some medical marijuana or whatever you
get. In fact, you gave me the perfect opportunity to do that. Rodney, thanks for calling. I am going to transition to that very subject and throw that out there because something happened here in Michigan. Thanks for calling Night Call. Appreciate
it. Sounds good. Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, yes, I picked this up from the Free Press. And it says, Michigan law legalizing medical marijuana doesn't stop private businesses from firing people for drug use. So another one of these little glitches that is going to be worked out as we go along. Joseph Cassius, 30 years old, was an inventory control manager at a Walmart in Battle Creek, 50 miles south of Lansing. Like, we didn't know that, but until he tested positive for marijuana in 2009. He has a medical marijuana card and smokes pot to alleviate symptoms of an inoperable brain tumor and cancer. So this guy has an inoperable brain tumor. He has cancer, and his boss said, hey, no, forget it. You can't have relief. And he said that he did not smoke on the job. He didn't do it while he was working. He didn't do it before work. You know, he did it on his own time. But what happened is a U.S. district judge, Robert Jonker, said the law approved by voters in 2008 bars authorities from prosecuting people for marijuana use, but doesn't tell private employers what to do. And I know a lot of you have had your own situations, your own work issues, who are card-carrying medical marijuana members. So give a call about that and tell me what you think about this decision by U.S. District Judge Robert Jonker that said, hey, you know what? He's out. If you say he's out of here, he's out of here. But who cares if he has an inoperable brain tumor or cancer? Heartless and ignorant and terribly sad. I'm sorry for Joseph Cassius of Battle Creek. 313-298-WRIF. And we can talk a bit about the CPAC. Do you know about the CPAC convention? Did you see the straw poll? Hey, Ron Paulians, you're going to love this. You probably already know. Ron Paul, number one in the straw poll. But here's the thing. The straw poll is only like 3,700 voters. It's not that big of a deal. But I know to you Ron Paul folks out there, and you know who you are, that you are happy about that news. Quite a convention that was. Let's go to Port Huron where Craig is standing by. And Craig, welcome to the show. Hello? Craig, I hear you. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, great. Welcome to Night Call. And what would you like to talk about tonight? It says religions in the Middle East. Big subject.
Yeah, just religion in general.
Yeah, okay, cool. What about it? Turn your radio all the way off. I think that's what's distracting you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, do that, and then tell me what you want to talk about.
I'm an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, I went to Catholic school, and
you're still recovering.
Well, I'm an atheist, and what I wanted to say is okay. I don't understand why people get upset about religion.
Yeah? Like, on any level, or what?
Pardon me?
On any level?
On any level. Your relationship with whatever God you believe in is between you and your God. It's nobody else's business.
But what happens when wars are started over it? And that becomes a little bigger of an issue, wouldn't you think?
Right. That's what I get upset about is people fighting wars about religion. That's a personal issue between you and your God.
Yeah, go to your house of worship, pray at your house, do your thing. No problem, right?
Yeah.
But when it starts turning into worldwide tragic situations like war, it's a whole nother ball game.
Right, that's because people make so much a deal out of religion.
Yeah.
There are more important things. Your family, your life, your friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, if you believe in a God, that's great. You know, if that's what you need in your life, that's fantastic. Don't push it on other people.
All right.
I'm an atheist. I've never once pushed my beliefs on anybody.
And do people harass you for being an atheist?
Oh, yeah.
They think you're going to hell, right?
Yeah.
But you don't even believe in hell.
No.
Right. So it ain't no thing.
No. And if you want to believe in hell, it's hell on earth.
Right. Right.
You know? And if you were to believe in God, then you would say, okay, well, what about the people in Ethiopia who are starving? God doesn't care about them?
Yeah.
What did they ever do to anger God?
You know what Werby always says, which cracks me up? He always says, well, if God is real, why are there people in wheelchairs?
Exactly.
Why can't he heal paralysis?
Yeah, and then, you know, somebody dies and they say, well, that was God's plan. God has plans for him. What does God need him for? God can do anything.
I don't know. I know the Grammys were tonight, and I think there was probably a lot of people who gave credit to God.
Oh, yeah, definitely. and that's fine. If, you know, if they think God helped them in their life, that they needed that support, it's great it was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rock on with it, but don't push it on me, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Craig, I really appreciate you calling.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a good one. Thanks for calling Night Call. Okay. We do have a few open lines. Get on in at 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743 as we head toward the big 4-0 here at WRIF. Cool stuff. John is in Mount Clemens, wants to talk about medical marijuana. John, thanks for calling Night Call.
How are you?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Good. You know, I'm 28.
Yeah.
I'm a big supporter of the whole medical marijuana thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to think about, like, liability at work.
Right. Well, this guy said he wasn't smoking at work.
But he can't prove that.
Well,
I'm a big supporter of it. Like, you know, I smoke. I won't, you know, I don't care. But, like, you know, if I were to get drug tested at work and I failed, they would automatically think that I was high at work, you know?
Getting high on the job. That's what they
So really, I understand why they fired him. Now, if he could, you know, prove and have his doctors show him all the correct paperwork, I'm sure it would be different.
And don't you kind of think it depends on what they're doing for a living? I mean, you know, running equipment or, you know.
Like a driving job or something like that. But,
yeah.
I mean, what was his job at Walmart?
Let's see. He was an inventory control manager.
So he was probably operating their high lows or something like that.
You think? Okay, maybe. I don't know.
You know, and Walmart is automatically, you know, anyone who works at Walmart gets drug tests.
Yeah, they're pretty into that whole thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, all right. Well, another opinion on that. I appreciate it, John. Thanks for calling.
Yes, ma'am.
Medical marijuana at work? Yes or no? Should they be able to fire you because you already have the card? It's a law in Michigan. You tell me. 313-298-9743. And on that same subject is Dan and Wayne. Hi, Dan.
How's it going?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, when it comes to medical marijuana at work, it's not hard for people who have, you know, these pain problems, and they get Vicodin, and they eat Vicodin all day at work, which is more dangerous than pot would be.
Yeah, don't you think it's a little more, it affects you a little more?
Right.
Your motor skills or whatever.
But, I mean, this day and age, it's easy to go get, you can go to the doctor, and they'll give you Adderall prescription if you're sleepy.
Really? They will?
Yeah, they're also giving it for weight loss. So if you're fat, you can just take Adderall and not have to,
Oh, well, you know, that's a whole other issue, and fat politics are a whole other issue, and, so, okay, well, let's separate those. That's
right. Well, no, but I mean, time. What I'm saying is that they just give these pills which are equivalent to hard narcotics.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take Adderall, like Coke, if you don't need it, the same things with Xanax and Vicodin, all these.
They're just getting high.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a little irritating. People make such a big deal about medical pot, but
it's a little hypocritical. You know,
right.
I, some people, you know, that's a you can get those on the street. It's a street drug, just like marijuana. It's like, oh, okay,
right.
Okay. I mean, the prescription drug addiction is epidemic, wouldn't you agree?
Oh no, it definitely is. I know plenty of people whose lives have been affected by them, you know, severely.
Yeah, I remember I knew someone, a friend of a friend, who told me this person was taking like 20 Vicodins a day.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
I couldn't even wrap my brain around that. Let alone, you know. One or two.
No. Right. No, I hear you. I hear you.
Okay. Well, I get your point. Well taken, Dan. Thanks for calling from Wayne.
Yep. No problem.
All right. Here at 101 WRIF, it's the Night Call Show. Peter Werby is not here this week, but we'll be back together next week. I was off last week, so it's 3 weeks without being together, but I'm hoping he stayed up late enough to call me when we hit our 40th anniversary coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so. And it looks like, I love when Aaron, the phone screener, gives me little hints about what people are going to say. Apparently, you want to insult me, Richard, from Rockwood.
No, I don't want to insult
you. No? Okay, what is it then?
Yeah, well, I was just listening to your drugs. How do you sleep at night?
Do
you take any kind of pills?
No.
Do you take NyQuil? Do
no.
You just lay down in bed and fall asleep, just like that?
I watch TV.
There's no alcohol, there's no marijuana.
I fall asleep to the television.
Hey,
Richard from Rockwood.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I fall asleep with the TV. And I don't discuss my personal habits on the air, but do I have a drink? Do I have a drink once in a while? Who doesn't?
you were just having an argument with a guy a minute ago about drugs. And you're talking about politics and...
That's what this show... This is a political talk show. We talk about drugs. We talk about...
Oh, this is political?
Sex, rock and roll.
What happened to Headbangers Ball?
Dude, this show has been on the air for 40 years. Where have you been?
I've been listening to it every night when I work midnight. But now I'm off midnight. I'm back on day shift. And I was up late tonight. Now you're this.
Okay. Well, you know you love us. All right, Richard. Thanks for calling. And I'll take that as a happy anniversary to us here at WRIF. I don't know what to say sometimes. Here's Brad in West Bloomfield. We'll talk more about medical marijuana. Did you get fired, Brad?
No, I didn't. I'm actually a caregiver.
Okay.
And I do have somebody that I provide to who just went through a spontaneous drug testing at his place of business.
Mm.
And he even supplied paperwork from his doctors. I had to actually sign some paperwork as to how much I provide for him.
Really?
And for what reasons. He's got degenerative bone disease in his hip and goes through a lot of pain and helps him sleep at night.
Yeah.
And it was something that did not affect his work in the least. In fact, at this time that he was let go, he was number two in his particular store in sales.
Really?
Again, whether it loosened him up at work or not, well, the following day, I don't know.
He was performing, though. He was selling, correct?
He was performing without fault. I mean, you know, this last caller you had, Richard from Rockville or whatever.
Yes, something.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell he was smoking.
I wasn't sure. What are you doing?
Yeah, right. But you know what these people are actually getting out of it is comfort in a situation where, you know, maybe the conventional prescription medicines did not work, and a lot of people don't like the side effects of a lot of these prescription medications.
That's
you
so
know?
True.
You know.
Yeah, because there's it affects your liver and a lot of different organs. And
oh my God! Well, you know, the thing that cracks me up is when I see an ad on television for a particular medication that's supposed to be given to people with that suffer depression.
Yeah.
And one of the side effects is suicidal tendencies.
Is that now, unbelievable?
Yeah, now, seriously, do you want to give somebody a pill that's going to make their situation that much worse, that suicide is actually more of a threat than it may have already been in their situation?
The head shaker. Have you seen the one? This one really, really blows me away. The one where it's the kind of addendum psychotropic drug. So if your depression pill isn't enough, take this little booster depression pill, and it'll take you something over the edge, and you'll just be, you know, all marshmallows and rainbows and butterflies, and life is good.
You'll be flying with Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Yeah, and you'll be running through that field of daisies, and
It's crazy. The only pill that has a good side effect is Viagra. If you have an erection lasting more than 4.5 hours, call a doctor.
You better give them a call.
If I had that happen to me, I couldn't get my wife off me long enough to call a doctor.
How long have you been married?
7.5 years. Very happy years.
Oh, and, good.
It's just great, but I love the show.
Oh, great.
Hope to hear you and Peter together again next week. And
you will.
Have a great evening.
You will. Thank you so much, and happy Valentine's Day to you and your wife.
You too, Jillian. Bye-bye.
We're going to talk about Valentine's Day a little bit later in the show. Open lines, everyone. What do you think? 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. And we go to Greg in Auburn Hills. Greg, can you turn your radio down?
Yeah, sure can.
You got it.
About that.
Hey, how you doing? What's on your mind?
You know, I'm talking about the medical marijuana, but, you know, if you seem to think about it, everything that we've had in the United States right now has been built on that. You know, whether it be in the auto industry, I was a truck driver for a lot of times, and I've seen a lot of these guys that were high, you know.
That were high, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what? What's the difference now?
I mean, they were driving the truck and they were high.
No. I was driving the truck. But I went to these auto plants.
Were you high?
And, huh?
Just keep going.
No, I was not high.
Okay, good.
No, not driving. Hell
good.
No.
Good, I'm glad.
But, you know, if you think about it, this has been around for the longest time. And it's about time that they legalized it because they're going to get it regardless. I pulled into plants where I've seen a lot of things. But you know what? It's the American way.
Say the last part. It's America. Is that what you said?
What's that?
What was the last part?
It's the American way.
The American way. Oh, I mean, I know a lot of people who do it, and, you know, I think...
Yeah, so do I, and I've seen it. You
I
know,
think
I've
California is going to be the first one to legalize it, Mon. I think Bob Marley would be smiling.
Oh, yeah, he would. And he'd be singing a heck of a lot of songs.
Well, I just know a lot of people get great relief from... Yeah, and I wish we had more songs, but, you know, a lot of people get incredible amounts of relief from these when they have chronic diseases. From the use of medical marijuana, and I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for calling, Greg. You have a great night. Call again sometime, okay?
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. And looks like a couple of you calling in. Just hang on, Aaron. We'll get your call. A couple of open lines still. And always a hot-button issue, but it looks like someone does want to talk about Obama. We can talk about that. There is a lot going on as far as Congress goes and budgets and things like that. So let's do this. Let's take one more call here. And who's been on the longest? Let's go to Sean in Clinton Township. Hi, Sean. Welcome to Night Call. Thanks for calling.
How's it going?
Can you turn your radio all the way down?
Yes, I can turn my radio down. Yeah, how's it going?
Beautiful. It's going great. How are you?
Doing good.
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, we were talking about medical marijuana.
Yeah.
And, well, my main concern is I've been growing up prescribed Adderall for a long time as far as just keeping me awake, making me pay attention, stuff like that.
Okay, so it's for ADD.
Yes.
Okay.
Deficit. And I guess all my side effects from that medication were very dramatic. I couldn't sleep at night. And, I was performing in school, but, like, while I was performing at school, I was sweating a lot. My palms were sweaty. I was going to lunch, not eating.
No.
A lot of things like that. And I guess it was, I'd never actually tried marijuana until I got out of high school.
Yeah.
But after I got out of high school, when I tried it, it allowed me to sleep at night while on this medication.
Yeah.
It allowed me to perform better. And overall, it's given me a better lifestyle.
Right. So there's another example. You have ADD and maybe do you have anxiety?
A little bit. Yeah. You know, just your general problems. I think a lot of kids go through a lot of problems, but the marijuana definitely does help, but you cannot use it as an escape. That's one of the things. You just can't use it as an escape from your daily life.
Yeah, now, do you have a card?
I do not have a card.
Wait, just say yes, I do. Yes.
Yes, I do have a card.
Well, you should probably look into that. There's a lot of people doing that now.
I'm afraid of being on a database.
Yeah, I know a lot of people certainly are, and especially it's kind of new, and we'll see how it progresses. It's interesting watching it progress from a journalistic point of view, for sure. All right, Sean from Clinton Township, thanks for calling, and I'm glad that something helped you out. Take care. All right. And, the lines are filling up. Let's go, let's do this. I'm going to take this quick break. We have Rich in Flat Rock, Tim in Shelby Township, Charlie in Milford, and other people who are calling in as we speak. Be patient. Hang on the line. I promise I'm going to get to you. We'll be right back here on Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
How do you prepare for jobs involving electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology? Call ITT Technical Institute. Develop knowledge and skills that you could use to pursue many opportunities in promising career fields. At ITT Tech, classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123. It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
To 101 WRIF, 40 years in the Motor City and rocking hard to this day. And I'm happy to be the first one to bring it in, and I can guarantee you it's going to be a big day here at WRIF. I know Drew and Mike are going to be doing a big show, and Ann Carlini will be out interviewing people during her entire show, Meltdown as well, and of course Scott Slayer, they're all going to be here. It's going to be a big day. In fact, I'm going to come back tomorrow later and talk to Ann Carlini about some of my memories of starting back in 98 here as a DJ and as a producer of the Night Call show. Been here a long time. Left for a little bit, went to Miami, and came back and been back for several years now. So happy birthday, WRIF. Any Night Call memories you have out there? And any riff memories, we'll just take those because... So many memories to be had in the Motor City with this very radio station. It is unbelievable and almost unheard of in the radio climate of today. So thanks to you, the listeners, for keeping it going all of these years. You guys are the best, and everyone here. I think I can speak for everyone here in saying that. So happy birthday, and I thought maybe I was going to hear from the Werb, but who knows, maybe he'll call in. We're talking about a lot of different things, opened up talking about Egypt, talking much about medical marijuana, and I think we will go to switch up a little bit. Someone wanted to talk about Obama. It's Charlie in Milford. Charlie, welcome.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing just peachy. How are you?
Actually, not too bad.
Good.
But I got a thing here. Okay, you know how the Big Three and all these big corporations went over to, you know, to Washington and said, hey, we need a loan?
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. They did all that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, I wrote them two plans. I gave them two plans on paper. You know what I mean?
Who you wrote this to? Obama?
Yeah, I wrote it to the president,
cool.
And I told him, okay, this is the way I look at it. I live in Michigan.
Okay.
Okay, your unemployment rate is, like, outrageous, okay? So, like me, I'm a single guy, all right? Now, you got a family of four. Now, you give the family of four $275,000, okay? And that way they can manage their house. They ain't going to be in foreclosure. The money's going to go right back into the banks. The banks don't need money.
$275,000?
Okay?
Okay,
yeah.
Is this, okay, I'm following you, kind of.
You see what I'm saying?
Kind
okay.
of, yeah.
Instead of, you know, throwing all this money into unemployment, welfare, and everything else, just give it to the people.
Well, that is giving it to the people, actually.
You know,
that is giving it to the people, because these are, just think of all the people who here in Michigan are relying on that to feed their children.
Right. I understand that. What I'm saying is if you just, like, you know how you got the welfare, you have the welfare buildings, you have Social Security buildings, you could set up right there, and the people, like, through their Social Security number, basically, they could go there, like, they would have a family of two or three, whatever, they would get more money than a single person. Now, a single person can get, like, say, $100,000.
I think we single, we non-married people get dissed.
Right, you know what I'm saying? that way they would make money. And they wouldn't have to go through the unemployment. See what I'm saying? They could build money up through that.
Okay, that's interesting. So no response from the president, I see.
Not yet.
Okay, you're waiting, though? All right.
I'm just wondering. Like,
don't hold your breath, Charlie.
Well, I'm not. I just figured, you know, maybe it's because that made sense, I guess. I don't know. And that way they wouldn't spend so much money.
I don't know. Everyone has a theory. Everyone has a way to fix it, don't they? But I don't profess to have all the answers.
Right. I'm just trying to make it easier than, you know, having all these big companies making all this money. I mean, they're doing is giving each other raises and stuff. You know what I'm saying? It seems like to me.
I'm happy. Hey, listeners out there, who isn't happy that the car companies are bouncing back?
You know, I'm happy about that.
You should be.
It's like, you know, if the people that are losing their homes, though, you know what I'm saying? Those are the ones that I'm, you know, it's like, come on now. You know, they need to help. Like, what was it the other day? The two family members that were in the service, Chase Bank took their home while they were gone. You know what I'm saying? I
mean, it's a sad state of affairs. Sad state, yeah. Charlie. Okay, well, hey, keep writing letters. Thanks for calling.
No problem. You have a good night.
Yeah, you too. And you know, writing letters, I always encourage it. Most definitely. Rich in Flat Rock's been hanging on for a while. Hi, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, all kinds of crazy stuff. What about you? Happy birthday to the Riff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about the medical marijuana thing, because the biggest thing with that is if it's not hindering, and if the way they get the information didn't come because you actually did something wrong or made a mistake or had an incident at work.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing what you're supposed to do and there's no arguments, then I don't think there should be a question.
Yeah, and then don't worry about it. I mean,
I don't want anybody, watching everything that I'm doing, but at the same point, if they find that in the test, then it's like, okay, we're watching you now. And you have to realize that if you have an accident and we have to send you to the clinic, they can test you for that and it can cause you problems. You know, just handle it responsibly. And that's the problem that we have with the welfare and why we couldn't give large sums of money to people, because people are stupid.
Who's stupid?
We are. We make dumb decisions. I know a lot of people that are scraping by to pay their bills, and I mean, they're making it enough to put a little bit away, but I mean, everybody has a right to own a 56-inch widescreen plasma TV, but everybody just can't afford it. And it's the same with a lot of the cars. Everybody has a right to buy a new car, but by going the lease option, the only thing you're doing is you're taking away maintenance, which means you're that much more helpless because you can't work on your own stuff, because there's still a majority of work that needs to be done on just maintenance stuff on cars that people could do for themselves, and they don't. They take the bite and say, well, I lease the car.
God, not me. I couldn't do anything. I can barely put windshield wiper fluid in my car.
That's the things that get rough, because when you fall in, you don't really notice it, but when you fall in and you do that things that way, you say, well, I'll pay a little extra because I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to mess with the used car, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's smart right now to just, buying a used car is not a bad idea.
The dealers are doing a lot to themselves, and they're cutting themselves out of the support loop, because by going with the lease vehicles, even after they're turned in and you put them on a lot, it's still a vehicle that the majority of the people have to take out a loan.
These guys are just trying to survive. Trust me, my dad was a car dealer for 30 years. I know it well. All right, Rich, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your phone call.
Oh, no problem.
Have a great night, and happy birthday to WRIF, 40 years rocking the Motor City. Let's see. Tim in Shelby Township says he knows a lot about medical marijuana. Tell us.
Hey, how you doing? I do know way too much about medical marijuana.
What?
Because
what?
I was raided by the police a couple of months ago.
Oh.
For selling my legal medicines to a legal card-holding patient.
How'd that turn out?
I am in the process of going to court, but they keep putting off court date because I don't think anyone wants to set precedence on this.
Oh, well, that's not surprising.
No, I had a legal patient with holding a card. The cops must have had something on him because he brought an undercover cop in here.
Really?
When I asked to see his card, he couldn't produce it. I said, that's all right. Frank's my patient. I can still sell this to him. We're all legal.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we pay our money to get registered and we get our card so we can be legal. But when
so you're not able to be a caregiver now.
I am a caregiver until I am convicted of a felony. I haven't been convicted of anything yet. And
oh, gosh, I hope you're not convicted.
I am a caregiver for two patients, one who has terminal cancer, and I provide them with their medicines for free.
Wow.
How I'm able to do this, I have a greenhouse operation that in the summer I grow my one crop.
Mm-hmm.
October, November, I harvest my stuff. It goes, it hangs for, you know, a week or two, and then it goes into jars, which has cure for 30 to 90 days, depending on the strains.
Interesting. Well, I'm...
So as it cures, well, you have to, you know, they put limits on how much you can have.
Right.
I always stayed in my limits.
Yeah, so you get within, wait, may I say it? Wait, the law!
Within the law, absolutely.
Sorry to yell.
There's so many points I want to talk to you about this. I provide this medicine for free, and we could be doing this all over Michigan. If we could just get the growers to come to one place, and we have a retail outlet that could sell it cheap, like $100 an ounce. If it was priced that, everyone would come from Michigan and come to Macomb County if we set up a local program like this.
You think, is California a good example?
It's an example. Well, they're going through all kinds of hardships. I have, you know, I have 50 people on my Facebook that are friends, and I would say 20 of them are in California. So I hear up to dates on what they're going through.
Right. Is it similar? Or?
It's, you know, it's all over the board. It depends on where, because every county does it differently. It depends on what the prosecutor, what his personal view is on marijuana. It doesn't come down to what the people say. If the people told me I can grow pot, I can smoke pot, I can give it to my patients that need the pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Right? Well, interesting. Yeah. Well, gosh,
I hope things
go well for you.
Everything was stolen from me by the police department that came in here.
Yeah, it's real...
battered down my front door. They walked in my back door. They battered down my garage door.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. It's such a weird time frame right now because they passed the law, and I think a lot of agencies don't know what to do with it right now, and it's creating a lot of confusion and, you know, just all of these stories I keep reading and reading and reading, and we'll see how it plays out, and good luck to you. Okay, Scott in Clarkston, he would like to wish... us a happy birthday. Scott, hello.
Hello, Julian. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you tonight?
Excellent. I just wanted to, the only comment I had was a happy birthday comment.
Yeah, how long have you been listening?
You know what? It's funny you say that. The first radio, anything radio that I have to remember is Big Daddy screaming, "It's Maui time." And I remember being a kid, and actually, which doesn't speak much for my mom, I had the bee sticker? I don't know if I say it on the air.
Oh, the bitch sticker? You can say bitch.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I remember having the bitch sticker on my headboard when I was a kid, and like I said, my first memory of any kind of radio, my first, and along with my wheels, I had a wheel sticker too.
Yeah.
But my first memory of anything I had to do with radio was always Big Daddy screaming, "It's Maui time."
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to say that I was raised on the riff, and my kids are being raised on the riff.
Right on. Well, he screamed that for a lot of years, and I appreciate the memory. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye. And you know what? I want to play something. This is about 2 minutes long, and this is a former producer. And everyone hang on the line. Charlie, William, Ethan, Scott, and there's a couple of open lines, by the way, if you want to call. And we'll stay on the topic at hand. We can switch topics, whatever you want to do. As we always say, we just are all over the place. 313-298-WRIF. This is a former producer of Peter's, Joan Galloway, and this is a memory. I haven't heard this. I wanted to wait so I could listen with you guys. It's her memory of being with Peter Werby on the Night Call show.
Hi, I'm Joan Galway, and in the late 1970s, I was the producer of WRIF's Night Call. We were very happy one day when we were given the official okay from the warden to do a live broadcast from inside the walls of Jackson Prison. Now, one of the things we were going to discuss was a Scared Straight program that had been started by the Jackson Prison chapter of the Junior Chamber of Commerce. I know! Who would have thunk that the JCs recruited their members from prison? Anyway, the list of rules and procedures we had to follow was both long and sometimes mysterious. For example, we couldn't have any barrettes in our hair if we wore them, because they'd either set off the metal detector going in, or an inmate might try to snatch one and use it as a weapon, maybe just want it for his own hair. No nail files, of course, and no bananas either. I didn't ask why. Finally, the big night arrives, and the host and I confidently approach the first point of entry. We're patted up and down, and then we go through the metal detectors, me holding my breath. I know my bra had underwires, but that was the one risk I was willing to take. Finally, they leaf through our binders and take everything out of our purses. One guard picks up one of our emptied purses, turns it upside down, and gives it a little slap on the bottom, and something falls out. Oh, no, it can't be. How did that thing get in there? What the hell is it? It's a roach. Everybody knows it. And I'm not talking about the creepy kind. Immediately, we are engulfed by a swarm of guards and made to do the perp walk straight to the warden's office. We're sweating profusely, and I'm wondering if indeed this is going to be the first time in showbiz history the show didn't go on because the players, obviously framed players, had brought a joint into the joint. Well, the rest of the story is a little anticlimactic. The show did go on, but it was touch and go. We were very touched the warden let us do the show, and then we were very touched when he let us go afterwards. In fact, the show actually did go on to win some kind of broadcasting award. But you know that Scared Straight program? It worked on us, at least for a little while.
Oh, that's great. Joan Galway, who used to produce this very talk show, talking about a live broadcast at a prison, only Peter Worby. And, yeah, that was the 70s. Experimenting was a success, as he always likes to say. That was good. Thank you to Jade for getting that all set up for me so I could listen to that. And, oh, that was fun. I'm sure all of us producers have stories to tell. I'll wait till he gets back to tell the stories. We have Scott in Detroit who's been waiting quite a long time. Scott, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Welcome.
How you doing tonight, Jillian?
I'm doing excellent. What's up with you?
Not much. I just wanted to say that one of my hobbies is, political philosophy.
Yeah.
And when a government, any government, it doesn't really matter, when they tell us that a plant is illegal,
yeah,
when they try to make a plant illegal, they're violating our natural rights as human beings. And I'm sure you know this, but for some of the listeners out there, just I want you to think about that for a second. There's this organization of people. The government isn't some abstract entity. They're just people like you and I, and they've gotten together, and they've decided to tell us, other people, that certain plants we can't have. And in doing so, they're violating our natural rights as human beings. So that's really what I wanted to say.
Okay, Scott. Well, thank you so much for calling the program tonight. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Have a great night and a good week as well. And, you know, when we get on this issue, people just really want to talk about it. And, hey, you know, it's a hot-button issue here in Michigan. There's no question about it. No avoiding it. Ethan in Auburn Hills. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing real well. Thank you.
Great to hear that.
Thank you. What's going on?
I'd just like to talk about legalizing marijuana.
Okay.
I suffer from a disease called, ankylosing spondylitis, which is Sherman's disease where your cartilage deteriorates.
Mm.
And I've seen several doctors, and it's really hard for me to get a script for anything. I also have chronic knee pain. I believe that they should legalize marijuana for the age limit of 25 and up.
Oh, I've never heard that one. That's interesting.
Just like they would alcohol, you know?
Yeah, 21, right.
Right. Think of the effects of alcohol. You know, you get drunk, you don't care about anything, you just, it's a downer.
Well, it just kind of numbs you up, but,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you can stop at any gas station and pick your stuff up, you know, and be on your way and be driving.
Well, yeah, and don't even get me started on drinking and driving. I am, you know, I'm very, you know, hands off of people's lives, but that's one area that I just can't deal with. So, and think about all the people who do that. Think of all the people who just get hammered and
right,
hop behind the wheel.
And, I mean, they go to the bar, and you know you got to drive home, you know. It's like, why don't the cops just sit outside the bar and wait for them to leave, you know? That'd just be...
Well, you know what? They probably don't have to because the people are driving so stupidly they can find them anywhere.
Right, you know? That's true.
They'll find them eventually. I know people go for years and years, and I'm not saying I have never done it, but back in the day when I was younger, it was something that I did, but it's something that I haven't for many, many years, and so let's talk about that. I mean, I'd prefer someone probably just smoking a little weed and driving rather than alcohol, but,
right, exactly.
but nothing is probably best. We'll just go with that, okay?
Right. But they could also tax marijuana like they do cigarettes and booze.
Yeah. Make a lot of money off of it, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, how many people die from cigarettes and booze compared to pot?
It's true. Many, 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 many more, statistically.
I also would like to say happy birthday, and one of my best experiences was my daughter being born, and as well as hallucinating on mushrooms.
Oh, well, did it happen at the same time? I hope not.
No.
I thought you were going to say, like, Ethan, I thought you were going to say, my daughter was born, and on the way to the hospital, you were playing blah, blah, blah song, but no. You threw me for a loop there. All right. Well, Ethan, thanks for the happy birthday, and
right, thank you.
You have a good night, or good
appreciate
morning
it.
At this point.
You too. Thank you.
You bet. Call again. And I wish you, you know, the best of luck with, that sounds so weird. I wish you the best of luck with your health problems. But you know what I'm getting at. 313-298-WRIF. That number is 313-298-9743. We do have a couple of open lines, and we have Charlie in Detroit hanging on the line. Charlie, you are expecting to get your card, it looks like, from what I can see on the screen here.
Exactly. And I've had a couple of questions. Wasn't the caller a couple callers ago talking about the he was a caregiver?
Yeah.
And he was having trouble?
Yeah, he said that he was raided by the police. And I've heard of this happening in a few different places.
Oh, yeah, that's what I hear.
It's very confusing. The whole thing is very confusing to me.
Right, well, that's my next issue is hooking up with a caregiver because I'm using it because I went blind.
Oh.
And interocular, I had glaucoma that caused blindness.
Yeah.
So,
and this that is one
I
of the, that's one of the things, you do qualify for it. That is one of the... I guess, afflictions or whatever you want to call it, situations where you can qualify for it. Once you get the doctor, I think that they can help you find someone, you know?
Oh, because I went to the place out in Ann Arbor.
Yeah. And did they give you any information?
Yeah. They gave me a card and something else. But like I said,
you're kind of cutting out, Charlie, but I do wish you the best of luck. And, you know, I tell you, that glaucoma, I'm so sorry. Let's go to our next phone call. You guys are cranking them in here, and I love it. Greg in New Baltimore calling to talk about the Big M. What's up, Greg?
Hi, how you doing, Julian?
Great, thanks.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments.
Mm-hmm.
I just got off of work, and I heard portions of the comment where the guy had his house raided by the police.
Yeah.
Because he's a marijuana distributor.
The caregiver is what they call it, right?
He's a caregiver, right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to me how these so-called caregivers, their houses are just getting raided for no reason. Well, and then later on you mentioned that it's the law, that it's legal for caregivers to possess marijuana, and it's understandable. And I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, they can only have so many plants, is from what
right.
I've read.
Right, and I don't have a problem with the caregiver having so many plants, and
okay.
I don't mind a guy that has a medical marijuana card using the card, but I just want to know why it is that so many of these caregivers are selling marijuana to kids they're selling marijuana to people that are not in need, that don't have the necessary card to possess it.
Yeah, see, that's something I don't know about, and so I can't really.
Well, I do because I'm just getting off of work and I'm a cop and I called the show and I've called the show before.
Yeah?
And I just want to say,
were we nice to you?
No, you guys are not really being nice, and every time you're not nice, I got a call. I hate to do that because I love listening to your show, but
yeah.
Sometimes I just, like the guy was saying that, you know, they just kicked in his door and violated his rights. No, that's not true.
Okay, but that hasn't, just remember, that wasn't my story at all. I'm just letting people talk on the air.
And I understand, but I'm just responding to what he's saying. There's a thing called a search warrant out there. That's how we get into people's houses.
Right, that's
and
true.
Usually we get, and those are perfectly legal.
Yeah.
They're within our right to get a search warrant as long as we have probable cause to show that a crime has been committed. And chances are that these caregivers are getting their doors booted in.
Yeah.
They're selling to the wrong people.
Right. Okay. So, Greg, you're just saying these people are taking it too far. They're not.
Exactly.
They're not within the law as it's stated, is what you're telling me.
Right. And then they all cry that we violated the rights.
Okay. Well, and you're just doing your job, right?
I'm just doing my job.
You're doing your job.
Right now, I don't want some caregiver to make a couple of bucks and sell to some kid that shouldn't have it in his system. It's no different than Vicodin or hydrocodone or Xanax. These kids are getting a hold of that stuff too.
I think it is pretty scary when kids are.
Yeah, if you got a medical need for it, fine. You got a card, fine. You're a caregiver, you can have so many plants, and you can sell to people that have the need that hold the medical marijuana card.
Yeah.
Fine.
But
quit pushing at the people that don't have the card.
Be within the law is what Officer Greg is saying. All right. Okay. That's perfectly legitimate. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And you know what? Thanks for protecting us, because I got to tell you, I've got some good friends in the Michigan State Police who tool around the building here and make sure we're cool, and I love you guys.
Thank you very much.
All right, you bet. Thanks so much, and really, for keeping us safe. Get those drunks off the street. Sorry, you guys. Hate to be a downer. Okay, Larry and Ipsy, what's going on?
What's going on? Happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday to the Riff. For those of you who've just kind of tuned in, at midnight, we turned 40 years old.
Well, I listened to you since 1971.
Right on. So you know who Werby is.
Right. This medical marijuana.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they do sell it to kids and everything else, and I'm against that.
Wait. Slow down. What did you say?
I'm against these card holders that are selling to kids and everything.
Okay.
But, you know, us that do need it to have a card and everything else, we're getting raided and we're getting thrown in jail. That card don't mean nothing to the state law or anything else.
Yeah, you think that things probably need to shake out a little more before it's going to be
correct.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I got pulled over. I got a card.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had my bottle. I just came from the store.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, they cost me a bunch of money, and then they turned around, took me to jail, took my bottle, and I've got my green card. You know, now I'm fighting a marijuana possession case.
Aren't you supposed to have it? What are the rules? Are you supposed to have it locked in your trunk?
You got to, it's like a pistol. It's got to be away from, you can't reach it while you're sitting in the car driving.
And was it too close? Because if you were within the law, why did they take it?
Right, it was too close.
Too close, okay.
I got pickup truck.
See, Officer Greg, this is the kind of guy you're talking about.
I got 6, 7, 8 thoracic disc crusts, and they will not do surgery on me to fix me.
Well, listen, for everyone who has the card, I mean, you really have got to kind of follow that law, because it's there for a reason, and people fought really hard to get you that right. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Okay, so take it easy and don't do that again.
Well, you know, how do you go transport, you know, when you got a little Ranger? You know, it's front seat or the back, that's going to blow out. You know, that's crazy.
Yeah, you gotta figure something out there.
It's killing me. Can I get a bitch for the Ozone Boys?
Can you get a what?
Can I get a bitch for the Ozone Boys?
Oh, you want to get a bitch? Well, I'm not the one who does the bitch.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, you sound just as good as it is.
But I'll tell you what, I'll pass it along, and I'm sure that they're going to be sending some bitches out tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ron. You have a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. You can count on that, Larry. You have a good day
tomorrow. I'm on my way home to
cure my pain.
Okay. All right. Do your thing, man. Just do it within the law. Officer Greg, right? All right. And we have Theo in Detroit. Hi, Theo.
Hi. Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to you and the listeners. And
you too.
And happy birthday to Riff.
Thank you.
I was calling because a gentleman mentioned the plant belonging to everyone. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Monsanto?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I just read a big, big honking story about Monsanto. They gave sent all these seeds to the people of Haiti, and the people of Haiti burned them.
Oh, wow.
Because they said, we don't want your unnatural, genetically modified seeds. Monsanto is taking over the entire seed world.
Yes.
Pretty scary, isn't it? Go ahead and tell me to tell me.
Well, my question is this. How is it if God made the seeds, they can get away with genetically changing them and then getting a patent on them from the government? If you buy seeds from them, grow tomatoes, you get seeds or whatever the plan is, you save the seeds and you want to grow a crop next year, they will take you to court and have done so.
Yeah, do that for a year after they patent the seeds, isn't that right? They put it on hold. I just learned about this recently.
Right, and even if their seeds blow in your yard, you get caught up. The federal government really needs to do something about that as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you on that one, Theo.
All right.
Okay, well, thanks so much. We sure appreciate you listening, and call again, okay?
I will.
And happy Valentine's Day. You have a good one.
Thank you.
And I will, I need to talk about some of the origins, because there's, the Catholic version of St. Valentine's Day. There's when the Christians took over Valentine's Day, then it turned to love and, I don't know, Hallmark. It's their big day, isn't it? Okay, one more call. We're going to take a quick break and then our final segment. So, Mike, Nikki, Craig, hang on. We're going to go to Jackie right now in West Bloomfield. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. I'm great. Thank you.
Okay. I lived in San Francisco for 7 years.
Ooh, okay.
And so my ex now, he's black, he loves marijuana. And now it works for him. He promotes it because he thinks it's good for people that have AIDS. Mm-hmm. But I don't know about that.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, it alleviates pain. It's been proven scientifically. So no question about that. And you know what's sad? I can't believe people are still getting AIDS. You know, the numbers are still so frightening. Mm-hmm. And, all right. Well, thank you, Jackie, for calling. And it definitely does alleviate pain. Ask anyone who has one of those diseases and utilizes this plant, this flower, to make themselves feel better. A lot of people do it. And I'm all for anyone feeling better, especially within the confines of their own home, and especially when laws have been passed. Okay, we will be right back here on Night Call, and this is your last chance to call in. So there is one or two open lines, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. This is the Night Call Show on the Riff. 40 years!
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
See the World Scuba Center in Farmington Hills, General Nutrition Center in Troy, the Whitney in Detroit, and Angela Marsh Salon in Macomb.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Peter Werby will be back next week, and we'll be doing this show again together. And happy birthday to 101 WRIF, 40 years. 40 years of Night Call. So happy birthday, happy anniversary, whatever way you want to look at it, to this show as well. I'm proud to be a part of it and extremely proud to be a part of this radio station, one that allows a voice, we say, of reason. Talking a lot about medical marijuana tonight, which whenever we bring it up, it's like guns or, you know, things like that. It's like, bam, there it goes. There go the phone lines. Well, it is officially Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day to you. It does have, from what I, the research I did, political and religious beginnings. And according to one story, Roman Emperor Claudius II, he imposed a ban on marriage because too many young men were dodging the draft by getting married, and only single men had to enter the army. A Christian priest named Valentinus was caught performing secret marriages, and he was sentenced to death. One story says he was getting busy with the jailer's daughter. That really did him in. And the other one was that he had young lovers visit him with notes about how much better love is than war. Ah, Valentinus, I could not agree more with you. And then, let's see, Christianity takes over Valentine's Day, 469. Emperor Galatius declared February 14th a holy day in honor of Valentinus instead of the pagan god Lupercus. Lupercus, I guess it is. This allowed Christianity to take over some of the celebrations of love and fertility, which had previously occurred in the context of paganism. Pagan celebrations were reworked to fit the martyr theme. Christianity did not approve of rituals that encouraged sexuality. Oh, how dare they? Instead of pulling girls' names from boxes, both boys and girls chose the names of martyred saints from a box. I know, this cracks me up. It wasn't until the Renaissance of the 14th century that customs returned to celebrations of love and life rather than faith and death. People began to break free of some of the bonds imposed upon them by the church and move toward a humanistic view of nature, society, and the individual. Sounds like right up our alley here. Valentine's Day, no longer part of the official liturgical calendar of any Christian church. It was dropped from the Catholic calendar not until 1969. That one really surprised me. So now it's, you know, it's chocolates and a lot of activists, you know, there's a lot of issues. Remember blood diamonds? Well, now that's blood chocolate. And there's an online campaign aimed at raising awareness of the cocoa trade in the Ivory Coast, which is helping, it says here in this article, a Reuters account, the Praia regime of the incumbent, while another focuses on ending the alleged use of child labor by growers in West Africa, which produces about two-thirds of the world's cocoa. So sorry, I had to be a downer about chocolate. And I love chocolate. It's so darn good. But I would say know your sources. Know your sources. And as always, shop locally, people. Shop locally. Okay, back to our phone lines for our final segment here on Night Call. And we will go to Ann Arbor, where Mike is standing by. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Happy 40th.
Why, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I just wanted to touch a little bit on the subject that you have going on this evening.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit with marijuana, I don't know if anyone's brought it up yet. The plant itself is a miraculous plant. It produces more oxygen than any other plant mm-hmm. that we have on the planet. So for fighting global warming, it's one of your best defenses.
Ooh, there you go with that global warming. You're going to get people all in a snit.
Yo, I have plenty more to go about that.
Listen, we do it every week.
With, you know, with marijuana being sold to kids of younger age, myself, I'm in my mid-20s. I have my medical card. I've been into marijuana ever since I've seen around my parents, which I would have to say a lot of the younger kids, if they're introduced to it, it's normally through their parents.
I guess it depends. My parents were, you know, kind of straight out of the 50s, pretty straight-laced people, and alcohol was as far as they went.
Well, I guess with my generation, we had the 70s, so.
Well, there you go. That's all you had to say.
Exactly. So I do grow it myself. And with America, we're a free market society. So if you're going to have someone that's going to pay you, say, $500 to someone's going to pay you $1,000, you're not going to look at age. You're going to look at money.
Oh, all right.
So you're going to sell it to whoever pays you the most, just as you would with any other service.
Right. Right. All right. Well, so you grow up, you're a caregiver. Is this what you're telling me?
I am not a caregiver. I'm just a patient.
Oh, you're patient.
I don't grow that much. I'm allowed to have 12 for myself, and that's all I do.
That's what it is. Okay. I lose track of all of this, and, so it's always good to be informed. Thanks for letting me know.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. Okay, Mike, thanks for calling the program, and thanks for the happy birthday. We sure appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Love Ann Arbor. Go to Zingerman's. Great place.
No, absolutely.
Love that place. Nikki in Waterford. Few comments about the cop and medical marijuana. Officer Greg called in, I think it was New Baltimore, and I think that's what you're responding to, right, Nikki?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
I think that it's absolutely ridiculous I'm glad that he's doing his job and that people out there should be doing that to control the mess that our state has made of the medical marijuana card situation. There's a lot of loopholes and a lot of nonsense that needs to be figured out, but I think that it's wrong that he wants to compare it to narcotics. There's a big, huge difference between marijuana and narcotics.
Okay, go ahead.
there are a lot of doctors out there that are writing these medical marijuana prescriptions for a lot of bullcrap reasons.
Oh, really? that's what you guys are here for, to inform us on what you know as well. So that's
right, right. The medical marijuana card is not very hard to establish through most doctors.
Okay.
And then there are like all these loopholes in the system where it's legal through the state, but it's not legal through the government.
Okay, so wait, are you for it or against it?
I am all for it. I have
okay.
my card. And
that's what I thought. That's what I thought. I got confused for a minute.
But I think that they need to figure it out a little bit better.
Well, that's what he's saying, and I think they have just as many things to figure out as the lawmakers and the people.
Well, they've made it legal without having it all figured out yet.
Yeah.
And that's why so many people are still getting in trouble, because we as cardholders mm-hmm. have all these rules and regulations that we have to go by. But then, like that other guy said, it wasn't, 20 feet away from him
right.
instead of 25, so he went to jail.
Yeah, but do you do that? Do you put it, you have to have
You're supposed to keep it, yes, in the vehicle. You're supposed to have it in a jar. Like, you can't have it in a bag. You have to have it in a glass container. And
yeah.
you have to have it many feet away from you in the
right.
vehicle.
I mean, it's the same as alcohol, right?
Well, that's another thing I don't agree on. You don't black out when you smoke. You don't wake up the next day and go, what happened yesterday? After a whole night
yeah.
of, smoking,
right.
and, like drinking.
So I hear, yeah.
So, I don't know. Like I said, that's why all these people are getting in trouble, because they're just it's not right yet,
Right, yeah. Well, there's a lot of shaking out of that law to do, for sure.
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
Okay, well, thanks. You keep, do it, just do it right, though,
Do it right and follow the rules until
yeah.
Michigan has it all figured out. Because, if you're growing 13 plants instead of 12,
yeah.
and you're selling to your next door neighbor.
You're in trouble.
Have a card. Yeah, like this guy in Ann Arbor, he was growing his 12 plants outside. Well, that's asking for trouble. It
yeah.
says, specifically that if you're growing your 12 plants, you have to have them in a locked facility in your house.
Okay.
So follow the rules, and it's going to be fine.
Follow the rules, and you'll be okay.
That's
all right.
It.
Thank you so much
thank
for calling,
happy
Nikki.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
All right.
Day.
To you.
All right. Thank you.
To you as well. Thanks for calling. 313-298-9743. Another 15 minutes or so of the show. So if you would like to get in, now is the time. We're going to breeze on through these calls. And holding for quite a while is Craig in Lincoln Park, and you want to talk about Officer Greg. He's become the star of the last hour of the show. Are you there?
Yes. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Happy 40th.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, I heard the cop. I don't smoke pot.
Yeah.
I think it should be legalized. Maybe like the guy that called in and said, if you're 25 or whatever, I just, you know, this whole cops are heroes thing, to me, it just, I find that funny, you know. It's, human behavior is always one group trying to control another, you know, whether it's religion or, I mean.
I definitely don't like to be controlled, and I hear you there, but I want to tell you that, I've had police officers protect me, and for that I'm forever grateful.
Well, I'm, but to say that he goes by the law and, I mean, they don't need probable cause to pull anybody over. I mean, he could pull you over whatever he wants and say whatever he wants. And I'm not saying that the guy that they raided wasn't selling to, you know, somebody he shouldn't have been. He probably was.
And you're not saying that Officer Greg, who called him, is that way.
Cop. I'm just saying they can basically do what they want and say, oh, we have to get warrants. And, well, how hard is that for them to do? You know, my buddy, his ex-wife.
I think there is quite a procedure to getting a warrant.
But my buddy's ex-wife, she had a friend who was dating a state cop. And my buddy used to tell me when they would go out, this guy would brag about how his sole purpose was to get into cars. He patrols on I-94 there out in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And his sole purpose was to get inside of cars.
And check it out. I think some cops are hungrier to bust people than others. And I think there are a lot of cops who really don't care if you have a little weed, but I'm not speaking for the officers of the law here by any means, but
right,
I'm just saying.
I find it funny how one, you know, how groups of people try to control other groups of people, you know. I'm not a big gun owner, but hey, if somebody wants to go up in the woods and shoot guns and that's what they enjoy and that's the happiness that they get out of life, who is anybody else to tell them not to?
Mm-hmm.
And just like if somebody wants to smoke pot and you're an adult and you're not giving it to kids and
yeah,
that's what you want to do in your own house, who should be there to tell them that, you know?
Right. Yeah. You don't deal well with authority, do you?
No, I actually don't.
Good for you. All right. Well, listen, you have a great day tomorrow, I guess, and happy Valentine's Day, and thanks for the birthday wishes.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
All right. Thanks a lot, Craig, calling from Lincoln Park. And let's see who has been waiting the longest. It's Melvin. Or no, it's not Melvin and Mike. It's Mike and Melvin. Mike, what's up?
Hey. Okay, a couple of things I gotta go over with y'all. Okay, marijuana. I have a brother that was a cop. He was a cop here in Michigan for a little bit. I knew him when he was a kid, 18, and or younger, actually 15. And he was one of the biggest dope smokers I ever knew, biggest beer drinker. Hell, he drank more beer than I did, you know.
A cop who smokes, huh?
Yeah. Mm. And then he moved to Florida, got transferred, or, you know, got another job down there. You know, he left Michigan, Port here in Michigan. And he's still a big dope smoker and a big pot smoker. And he flashes his little badge and get pulled over or whatever. You know, beaten, whatever, and drinking a beer, open his house against something to fry us for on New Year's 2nd. And, you know, he gets away with it.
Hmm. Well, you know, there's going to be a few people in every occupation.
Well, I've got a couple. My uncle's friend used to work at, or my uncle used to work at Bruce Steele, and had his best friend from kids, you know, he's like 50-some years old. He still listens to the riff on the internet.
Oh, cool.
Oh, man, he's awesome. But, you know, he's Dennis Dittmer. I don't know if you can say that on the radio, but...
Well, he did. He didn't cuss, so that's the good news.
Yeah, but I'm no names. But when the guy's retired...
No names, just between you and I.
Yeah, you know, this is part of the best Detroit cop I've ever met in my life.
Right on, okay. All right, well, listen, Mike, thanks a lot for calling. We appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. And, yeah, there are a couple open lines now, so if you want to get in the next few minutes, we'll definitely get you on. Memories of the 40 years of WRIF, 40 years of Night Call with Peter Werby, and then he added this other chick, Julie Jordan. Oh, yeah. That's me. And I'm so glad he did. I'm glad to be here. I just wish he were here to celebrate his 40th. It just seems odd for me to be doing all of this. But apparently he is okay with that. And I'm looking forward to him being back next week and hearing more of his stories. Like, I remember, I think the show was canceled at one time and people lined up around the building with signs and they brought him back. And, you know, a lot of history with Peter Werby and this radio station and Detroit in general. Okay, Lisa in Whitmore Lake, medical marijuana laws and concealed weapon laws. Here you are. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday, too. And it's not to me, everybody. It's WRIF, 40 years of rock in the Motor City.
Yeah, I was just wondering if anybody had any info on the new marijuana laws, if they go hand-in-hand with the CCP laws.
No, I think they're two entirely separate issues.
Correct. They are two entirely separate issues, but they're both legal. If I'm on, like, say, for example, if I'm on some chemical-altering drug because I'm a schizophrenia.
Okay.
And even though I know they're not allowed to have CCWs, but...
There's been a lot of mentally ill people getting a hold of guns.
But it's a legal prescription, too, is what I'm saying.
Right.
If you have a legal prescription and you have a legal license, how are they going to play hand-in-hand? Maybe... I hate to beat him up because I have nothing against officers, but maybe Officer Greg has some input on it.
I don't know. Maybe he does. Well, Officer Greg, you heard it. I don't know if we're going to have time to get any other calls, but we'll put that out. Maybe call back next week toward the beginning of the show, and we can actually tackle the issue a little.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for calling the show. We appreciate you calling Night Call here on WRIF. Brad and Ipsy, his wife. Oh, this is awful.
Hey, happy birthday to the Riff.
And thank you very much. I'll pass it along.
First of all, the last guy who just called.
Yeah.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Okay.
You shoot your eye out.
Shoot your eye out. Okay.
Well, anyway.
Medical, what did you want to talk about?
My wife has got 7 different autoimmune diseases. You're
wow.
The last caller, couple callers before that, already beat me to what I wanted to say. There is a lot of people out there who are taking advantage of the system.
Okay.
And who should not have.
I mean, it's always going to happen, though.
Cards.
Don't you agree, Brad? There's going to be some level of bending the rules or some level of corruption, no matter what. There's always going to be that.
You're not going to be able to get away with it. They need to put stricter stipulations on things. But my wife, she's terminally ill.
She's got
lupus, fibromyalgia, endometriosis, interstitial cystitis. The
oh
list
my
goes
gosh.
On and on.
I'm so sorry.
And, she's fought tooth and nail to try to get on SSI for the last 7 years. She finally got approved for it.
Good.
She finally got her Medicaid.
Good.
And, you know, for people who are out there taking advantage of the medical system, you people suck.
Taking advantage of what is something that's helping your wife, and you don't want these people to screw it up for everyone else. Is that what you're saying?
That's basically what I'm saying. Right. These people suck.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, the best to your wife and the best to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
and
Brad.
Happy Hallmark holiday.
Yes,
tomorrow.
Right. I hear you.
All right.
All right. You too.
Good night.
All right. Good night. Let's rip through these phone calls real quick. You guys keep calling. I know. We could go on for hours. Johnny in Detroit. Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
All kinds of stuff. What
just
about
came
you?
Back from Big Apple, New York City.
New York.
We found some medical marijuana in the hotel room.
You found weed in your hotel room?
Yes, the Ramada Plaza.
Did someone hide it? You didn't know what to do with it.
Because none of us have an actual medical marijuana card where it's actually legal for us to carry it.
So what'd you do?
So we threw it away in the trash.
Yeah.
And then about 2 days later, my roommate was vlogging about, like, man, I threw away some weed. And we said, what? You threw away some weed?
Yeah.
So we went up there and we ended up getting the weed out of the trash, and then we ended up throwing it away again because we couldn't find anybody to buy it.
You guys are crazy.
Well,
sounds like quite the weekend in New York. Did you do anything other than worry about the weed you found?
I'm actually driving back from Manhattan right now.
Right? Okay, but you're not high. You're straight, right?
Oh, I don't smoke marijuana.
Okay.
No, I don't think. But I also know that it helps glaucoma and it helps people recite lyrics when they're
It helps people recite lyrics? I don't know about that one. I think it makes people forget lyrics. It's that whole short-term memory thing they talk about. All right. Well, drive safe back from New York. Definitely It looks like you have good weather to drive in. And Jason in Richmond. Hi, Jason. Just a couple of minutes, so give me the headlines.
I never really understood the whole concept that a narcotic drug like a Vicodin, which you can get a prescription for any sort of pain, if you were to go into just a doctor's office and complain about something, they'll write it off and just say, you know, here, go cash that in.
Mm-hmm.
But medicinal marijuana, there's the detrimental effects, there really are none.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's, you know, any kind of smoke that the doctors will tell you could have some effect on your lungs, things like that. It is smoke. But I hear what you're saying, and it's demonized to be this, dirty street drug when look at how many of these prescription drugs are sold on the streets at alarming rates.
Exactly. And, like, I mean, even over-the-counter, like aspirins or those goody powders, the BC powders, I mean, those, they're terribly addictive. They're horrible for you. And yet they can still sell those with no recourse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it definitely is. It's messed up, and hopefully someday, it'll be less demonized. I think it's happening more and more all the time as laws change and as laws are introduced and as laws are passed and as they shake out in the system, which is definitely what we're talking about tonight, the concerns and what is, just the shakeout. And it'll happen. It's just going to take a while. And as a journalist, I see all sides of it for sure. Andy in LaSalle, California.
No, LaSalle, Canada.
Oh, Canada. Okay,
yeah,
CA. Gotcha. Hello, neighbor.
How you doing, Lisa? Happy birthday to the riff, first of all.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Thank you.
I believe it should be legal to grow in your backyard. You can do tomatoes and cucumbers. So
well, Canada's got some things figured out up there.
We're kind of getting on the right track, but I believe firmly that it's because they can't, the government can't tax you properly on it because people grow it in their backyard like tomatoes. But I think once they figure out a way to tax you and charge you appropriately,
then we'll be talking. Then it'll be big business, huh?
That's right.
Okay.
Got it.
All right,
have
Andy.
A great night.
Hey, you too. Thanks for calling. We sure appreciate it. And I'm going to try to get these last two phone calls in. And I think I should do this one here. I don't know if I'm going to like this one. Jim in Mount Clemens.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. Are you a man of reason?
Well, one would hope.
Okay.
Several years ago, I attended a commencement at a college down in Calhoun County. The speaker, he was Winston Churchill's grandson.
Oh, wow.
And he had said that at the Yalta Conference, when they were deciding how to break up the state, you know, what the Germans had taken.
Mm-hmm.
Churchill, I guess he was quite a visionary. He said, the problem, he says, eventually communism is going to fall. But he said, the problem is, the Muslims, and he was referring to
Muslims?
Muslims, the Islamic extremists.
Muslim, okay. The very, 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 very small percentage of Muslims who are the extremists who are making everybody look bad.
And he said he had talked with his grandfather. Matter of fact, he had the same name. And he had talked with his grandfather about it. And he said, one only has to look worldwide at the globe itself, East Timor, the bombings in Chechnya, Spain, where they blew up a train, the World Trade Center, when they first blew the bottom of it out, and then when they ran the airplanes into it. And he says, it's on the move. And he said, that's what people should watch out for in the 20th century, and now we're approaching the 21st century. But I just wanted to put it out there. This man, Churchill, Winston the First, he was quite a visionary. And a lot of what he foresaw when he was talking with Roosevelt has come about.
Mm.
But that's all I have.
Okay.
I just want to
put
it out there.
Appreciate the call, Jim.
Okay, hey, have a beautiful day, man.
All right, you too.
All right, bye.
Absolutely. Okay, one more call. We're going to squeeze Tom in from Chesterfield, and then we need to get to Peter Werby. We'll be here. We recorded an interview, a couple of interviews on the way in the 1 o'clock hour. Then Ron Crichton is going to rock you into your 40th anniversary birthday party here on WRIF. Right, Ron?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Tom, welcome.
Hey, Jillian, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Long-time listener. Love the show.
Great. We appreciate it.
I know it's getting late, but I wanted to just say I think it would be a great idea if the show started getting guests on the show to answer these questions directly, like a judge from a certain city or an officer.
Oh, yeah. You know, we do guests very infrequently, and, you know, Peter kind of runs how that goes. He does the guests, and no, he's not afraid of that, believe me. He kind of saves those guests for those recorded interviews after the show. But, you know, I had a guest on at the beginning of the show. Once in a while, we do. But there is one problem. When you're talking about getting a judge to answer a question, the show's 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday. That guy's got to get up. And, you know, Peter does a lot of work outside of the show in preparation for the show, so it involves booking studio time, doing interviews, and it gets a little complicated. And I think Peter just wants to just rave on instead of that.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. There's
so much confusion about the medical marijuana.
Yeah,
state law versus city laws.
Yeah, we're all very confused. Believe me, it's not, everyone is when it comes to this issue, and I just think it is a matter of things just kind of falling into place as they happen. Sadly, some of these things are confusing, and people aren't sure how they're supposed to go about doing it, you know?
Right.
So.
All right, well, have a good night. Happy birthday.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Have a great night. And everyone, thank you so much for calling in the show tonight. Peter Werby will be back next week. Thank you to Aaron for doing a great job answering the phones once again. And Peter Werby is next on Night Call. It's WRIF in the Motor City.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Why do we go through so much hassle for our morning coffee? We make it, wait in line for it, fuss with cream and sugar. There has to be a faster and easier way to shake the morning buzz. There is. 5-Hour Energy. It's ready right now. No making, waiting, or fussing required. And it really works. Just open it up, knock it back, you're done in seconds. Now that's fast and easy. 5-Hour Energy. The no wait, no hassle way to a great morning. Try it today.
Individual results may vary. See 5hourenergy.com for more details.
Does your furnace need repair? Your house need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to top-rated remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need a painter, electrician, plumber, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now, you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. If one thing I think is securely lodged in most Americans' minds is the American Revolutionary War period, the Founding Fathers and all of that, and the idea that this somehow was a period of great national unity among the colonists who fought against the British and made our country independent and set up a free government, it's that we didn't have the kind of turmoil, the ideological contest, the culture wars of today. Well, oh, I hate to break that bubble, folks, but there was a lot of contention. We hear people saying that this is and was a Christian nation and our founding fathers were Christians. Well, to burst that bubble, I'm bringing to our microphones Professor Kerry Walters. He's the William Bittinger Chair of Philosophy at Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. He's the author or editor of 19 books and more than 100 articles, and he has a brand new book out from Prometheus Books called Revolutionary Deists, that's D-E-I-S-T-S, Early America's Rational Infidels. And I think you'll recognize a lot of the names that we're going to talk about. But let's welcome Kerry Walters to the Peter Werby Show. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah, now I think we ought to begin just by some definitions and what are deists?
Well, a deist then and now, as a matter of fact, is an individual who believes in God, but believes in a pretty abstract notion of God. So far as a deist is concerned, God is a creator who sets the universe in motion and then kind of stands back and lets the universe operate on its own. A deist in the 18th century, our founding father deists generally rejected any kind of religion that relied upon belief in revelation or miracles or Holy Scripture that one had to take literally. They thought that the best Bible was the book of nature. If you want to know about God, then use your reason and the scientific instruments that your reason has enabled you to make and investigate the heavens.
What do you make of the contention that this is a Christian nation set up by Christian founding fathers? In fact, there's debate about this. I think there are some people that would say, Kerry Walters, you're wrong. These men were devout Christians.
Well, I think that it certainly is the case that there were Christian founding fathers. John Adams, for instance, seems to have been one of them, although, like most believers, he seems to have run through hot and cold periods. But the other side of the coin is that a lot of the founding fathers, or at least a lot of the patriots that we associate with the founding of the nation, might have paid lip service to Christianity because it was just the safe thing to do back in the 18th century. But if you read their writings, their personal diaries, their letters to one another, it's pretty clear that at best they're indifferent to Christianity. At worst, they're absolutely hostile to it.
Did they believe, a deist would then not believe in the divinity of Jesus?
No. And the verdict was out, depending upon what deist you read. Some deists thought that Jesus was a really good moral teacher, but others thought that the ethical teachings of Jesus were disgraceful.
Hmm. Well, in your book, Revolutionary Deists, Early America's Rational Infidels, you highlight a number of the founding fathers and colonial patriots. And probably the most famous is Thomas Jefferson, who was a critic of Christian supernaturalism. But as you say, he admired Christian ethics. And wasn't there even a Jefferson Bible?
There sure was. What Jefferson did, it was an amazing piece of work. Jefferson, of course, knew several languages, including Hebrew and Greek, and he had several Bibles in different languages in his home at Monticello. And he decided one day that he admired the teachings of Jesus, but deplored what he took to be the superstition that larded the New Testament. So he got himself a pair of scissors, and he got himself several editions in different languages of the New Testament, and he began snipping. And the Jefferson Bible, the so-called Jefferson Bible, is the result of all of that editing. He basically edits out accounts of miracles, accounts of healings, until you have left over what Jefferson considered to be the quintessential Jesus, Jesus the philosopher, Jesus, if you will, the deist.
Well, that's blasphemous, though, to Christians, right?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. And Jefferson was well aware that it would rankle a lot of people. And it's no accident that we didn't know anything about the Jefferson Bible until years after Jefferson's death.
Oh, that's interesting. So that wasn't available during his lifetime. I was going to say, how did people react to it? But so did he purposely keep it hidden?
He did. Jefferson is probably one of the most secretive men of this period. Again, a lot of the deists, not all of them, but a lot of the deists wanted to hold their religious cards close to their chest because they were afraid of the social implications of revealing them. But Jefferson in particular never really liked to talk about his religious views, even to his loved ones, much less in public. About the only person he ever opened up to about religious views was John Adams in that really famous correspondence that the two grand old men had in the last 20 years of their lives.
Well, doesn't that, though, contradict a little what you're saying in Revolutionary Deist, that here were these men that were the foundation of our country, yet there was religiosity was strong enough in that era that they had to keep it somewhat suppressed, although not all of them, certainly.
That's true, not all of them. And the tension between Christianity and deism in that period tended to oscillate. Sometimes the deists would feel particularly under a state of siege and would keep quiet, and at other times they would come out hollering the new religion of reason, as they called it. And as the 18th century continued, especially after the French Revolution in 1789, the deists really became militant, and there were newspapers, and there were temples of reason, which kind of substituted for Christian churches, and there were public rallies, and there were private and public clubs formed all up and down the eastern seaboard. So as the century progressed, deism really did find its voice. Jefferson was one of those deists, however, who remained reticent to the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Revolutionary Deists, Early America's Rational Infidels, you highlight six what you call rational infidels, including Thomas Paine, who he, among all of them, certainly was the most militant in his challenge of divine knowledge or intervention, correct?
He sure was. And you know, he paid a high price for that, too. Theodore Roosevelt, the future president, for instance, called Paine on several occasions a, quote, dirty little atheist, unquote. And Paine has really been reviled from his day right down to the present day. Whenever an individual who isn't sympathetic at all to rational religion wants to trot out an enemy of religion, it's Tom Paine, generally.
But he's well thought of, isn't he? Is he the I'm forgetting. Is he the one that said, give me liberty or give me death? No, that was Patrick Henry.
That was Patrick Henry. Now, but Tom Paine is well thought of, at least as a patriot. There's two Thomas Paines, so far as some people are concerned. There's the Thomas Paine who wrote Common Sense and who was really the best propagandist for the American cause during the War of Independence. It was fine as long as Thomas Paine stuck to that kind of rhetoric. And then there's the Thomas Paine, the deist, who writes The Age of Reason, this wonderful classic that he literally wrote in the shadow of the guillotine. It wasn't clear that he would live through the month as he was writing the book.
This was in France?
This was in France.
Yeah.
Thomas
yeah.
Paine was given because he had gained such a reputation for himself during the American War of Independence. French government, after their own revolution, gave him honorary citizenship. So he relocated to France. He actually became a member of the French Assembly, the French Parliament, as it were, and governed the country, helped govern the country for a few months before he fell out of favor with Robespierre. It's during that time that he was writing The Age of Reason and was thrown into prison right as he finished the book.
And he's got some famous lines. I don't know why I can't bring them up to my brain now. Doesn't Paine have some quotable quotes?
He really does. I think perhaps the most often quoted passage from Paine is right at the very beginning of his Age of Reason when he insists, my own mind is my church.
Huh.
I respect, he says, the religion of the Christians, of the Muslims, of the Jews, of the Hindus, but no institution can tell me what to think. And no institution really can tell any rational person what to think.
Now, where does this all come from, the Age of Reason? I mean, we had, of course, you know, the Reformation in Europe and all the wars between Protestants and Catholics and a whole bunch of religious reasons for what was written into our Constitution about the government not establishing any religion and all that. But what's a larger philosophical context for all of that? Suddenly, when we think of ages ago, you know, centuries ago, that everyone being religious and steeped in it, and suddenly you have these men that are secularists. What went on then?
Well, I think, Peter, you've really put your finger on an important origin of the movement, and that was the horrible hundreds of years of religious war that ransacked Europe. men and women of reason in the 16th and 17th centuries began to look at all of the bloodshed that was being spilled because of religious dissonance, and they asked themselves whether or not surely there was a more sane kind of religion that could be substituted for the Christianity of the day, one that wouldn't be as intolerant as the Christianity of the day happened to be. So first in France, and then especially in England, in the 17th century and early 18th century, groups of people began to reread the Bible, trying to see if it could be interpreted not as a book of revelation, but as a book of moral maxims and ethical wisdom. They were influenced by the rise of science, the worldview that insisted that the universe isn't mysterious, the universe isn't dark, that it's illuminated, and it's illuminated by natural law, and those natural laws can be understood through human reason. All of this matrix, I think, coalesced. It was a perfect storm, as it were. It coalesced into a new way of thinking about religion that tried to get away from the excesses that at least they saw and tried to move toward what they saw as a promising coalition, a promising marriage, if you will, of science and religion.
And how much did it affect the founding fathers in terms of the document that they, the documents, particularly the Declaration of Independence? And this was such a monumental change that people went from being subjects to citizens that had inherent rights. That was a unknown before, maybe a little in the Magna Carta, but certainly to have a foundation document for a nation was incredibly unique.
It really was, and it was a new dawning, wasn't it? I mean, it seems to me that one of the most obvious influences that the new religion of reason or deism began to exude was in the notion of human perfectibility. You know, the Christianity prior to the rise of the deists tended to be a kind of dour, bleak enterprise in which human beings were thought to be incorrigibly depraved. That was a favorite expression, incorrigibly depraved, meaning that we were so tainted by original sin that neither our reason nor our moral faculties could work on their own, and we depended exclusively upon divine grace. Well, the deist denied that. The deist insisted that human beings could, with their reason and with their conscience, realize truths about the world and realize truths about ethical behavior. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, you see those assumptions, those convictions, in fact, writ large. We have a right to life, liberty, and happiness. Depraved creatures don't have those sorts of rights, and depraved creatures aren't capable of exercising those rights, even if they had them. It's a whole new way of looking at what it means to be human.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Professor Kerry Walters. He is the William Bittinger Chair of Philosophy at Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania, and he's written for Prometheus Books. You can go to prometheusbooks.com, or you can go to kerrywalters.net. There'll be a link on my website as well, peterwerbe.com. The book is Revolutionary Deist, Early America's Rational Infidels, and we're going to get to a couple of these guys before this is over. Six rational infidels who were either founding fathers or colonial patriots. Now, I just ask you this, and I picked up on something you said, that the universe was not mysterious, according to the deist. I guess I would say personally, I think that that the universe is so mysterious that it's not understandable, and I actually don't spend much time trying to figure it out. I want to see how I can get rid of my cold. I mean, as a philosopher or as one chronicling philosophy, so the whole idea of the origins of the universe, the purpose of life, Bertrand Russell said, when someone asked me, what's the purpose of life, I asked them, what do you mean by the purpose of life? And that usually stops them. I mean, we're here, right?
You bet, yeah.
Any comment on that?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, I think that's a perfectly respectable position that you're suggesting. And I think it underscores a possible weakness with the whole deistic worldview, and that is these guys tended to be really optimistic. You know, they were living in the age of enlightenment, where new governments were taking shape, where new ideas were gaining people's imaginations. And they assumed that all we needed was patience and the right mechanical tools and a good dose of mathematics. And in point of fact, we could figure out everything that there was to know. They really didn't have any appreciation, kind of the post-20th century appreciation, if you will, that there are dark and mysterious places in the universe, and that in point of fact, they may not be impenetrable at all.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm hesitant even to relay this, but I'll give it a try. I mean, I've heard this said several times. This takes place in a Zen monastery where there's knocking on the door, and the elder monks go to the gate, and there is this disheveled young monk that says, "Masters, masters, I have not slept in 3 days. I must know the meaning of life." And one of them, the elder monks, hits the young man in the head with his stave and says, "There, that'll give you something serious to think about."
I love it.
Or the old thing about what's the meaning of life? Chop wood, carry water.
Yep.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But I suppose that's just another philosophy or the stories we tell ourselves of how do we get through what I consider to be this total mystery.
We do tell stories, don't we? And I imagine we tell stories in order to, at least in part, keep ourselves from realizing that there aren't any definitive answers to those sorts of questions. The deists would have answered the question, what's the purpose of life, in a pretty simple way. They would have said the purpose of life is to improve yourself and to improve the society in which you live. They didn't go much beyond that.
All right, Kerry Walters, let's get to some of these men that you write about. Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Ethan Allen, Thomas Paine, Elihu Palmer, and Philip Freneau. Am I saying his name right?
Absolutely.
I'm not familiar with him, but the most familiar probably is, maybe even more so than Jefferson, is Benjamin Franklin. But you say he was an ambivalent deist.
He was indeed. Franklin, of course, was the oldest of all of the American deists. He was born at the beginning of the 18th century, raised in a very strict Calvinist household, raised in Boston, a very strict Calvinist Christian Puritan city. And he was caught between, I think, the passing of one worldview into the next. He was raised in a kind of traditional, old-fashioned Christian ethos. And as he aged with the century, that ethos began to increasingly fall apart and give way to the deistic ethos, the deistic worldview. He has a foot in both worlds, and he never really could quite manage to give up the one completely for the sake of the other.
Well, we talked some about Jefferson and Thomas Paine. I'm not familiar with Elihu Palmer. I've heard his name before, but you say he's the most influential proponent.
He is, and he's actually, of all of the deists, and I'm fond of all of them, but he's my favorite. He was a Presbyterian minister who turned renegade quite early on in his life. He became convinced that what he had been trained to preach in the pulpit was just false, was just wrong-minded, and even worse, he thought was dangerous. And so he dropped the Presbyterian collar, and he put on the collar, if you will, of a deist preacher. He's the guy who, even more than Thomas Paine, spread the deistic gospel throughout the eastern United States. I mean, he was tireless in his deistic crusade. And it's even more remarkable because he was blind. A horrible yellow fever epidemic hit Philadelphia in 1793, where Palmer was living at the time. It killed his wife and killed one of his children. He fell terribly ill with it himself, but he managed to recover. The illness, however, took his sight away, and so for the last 13 years of his life, he was stone blind, but managed to write books and give lectures and preach.
Kerry Walters is my guest. He's the author of Revolutionary Deist, Early American Rational Infidels. And if you're just joining us, I know some people just catch different parts of this deism. The idea pretty much that a God kicked the world and the universe into being and the rest is all up to us, that it is rational thought in the improvement of the species. And also, isn't it that the world was sort of like a clock that could be, its parts could be discerned and understood many, many ways. Isn't that kind of the origins of modernism?
I think it is in many ways, yes, that's right. Yeah. Certainly the beginning days of modern science, yeah.
Yeah. One of the questions. So you mentioned earlier that there were these deist clubs and this had great expression. How did the organized Christianity respond to all this?
Was outraged, as you may well imagine, and ironically enough, my guess is that deism became even more popular than it otherwise would have been from being denounced every Sunday from hundreds of pulpits throughout the country. Christians were convinced not only that the devil was at work in New England, as it were, with the rise of deism, but they also were convinced that French republicanism which they feared greatly because of the example of the French Revolution, was being insinuated into the American scene by the deists. So they criticized them roundly for religious reasons, and they condemned them soundly for political reasons as well.
Yeah, and in fact, and feared because the French Revolution of 1789 was very hostile to Christianity, even removed the Gregorian calendar.
Yes.
And started started the dates over. And Philip Fresnel, who is a poet who I have to say I've never even heard the name before, so I'm anxious to read this section of your book. What was his influence?
Fresnel isn't known well at all. During his time, he was a pretty influential lobbyist, if you will, for what was then called the Republican Party, the Party of Jefferson, the radical party that was suspected by the Christian establishment. And Fresnel was a poet in his spare time, if you will, and wrote dozens of poems that, in an interesting way, try to, in verse, describe the basic religious and scientific assumptions of deism. My guess is that his poetry, which was quite popular during his time, probably did just as much as anything that Paine, for instance, wrote to spread the word of deism.
Now, is there an importance to locating the philosophies of the men who founded this country? I said at the beginning, conservatives often say this was a Christian nation and it was set up by devout Christians, or the fact that deism, that does not believe in divinity at all in our lives, is this an important distinction?
I think it is an important distinction. If for no other reason, then how one falls on the question of whether or not the nation was founded as a Christian nation will determine, I think, in large part, how one falls on the question of religious toleration. The deists during their day were staunch defenders of an open-ended tolerance of all religious perspectives. One of the things that so bothered them about the conventional Christianity of their day was what they perceived as its intolerance for alternative or dissenting worldviews. I think that in this day and age, when rhetoric on the religious Christian right, as well as rhetoric in the radical atheist left, is ratcheting up, a healthy dose of reasoned, moderate tolerance, as defended by the deists, could be very helpful.
Yeah, well, certainly we get a lot of that these days, and it's odd how the question of the Constitution has arisen recently. And usually when I say to people, what's the First Amendment all about? They say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to assemble. I said, you forgetting anything? It's interesting that the very first article, or the very first phrase in the Article 1 of the Bill of Rights is that Congress shall make no law establishing religion. Like that was, if they could have rank ordered it in any way, they could have put free speech first or freedom of assembly, but they put that Congress shall establish shall not be allowed to establish a religion.
I think that is an interesting point that you're making, and I think that you're absolutely right to suggest that there had to be a pretty strong reason for giving that primary place in the Constitution. But I suspect that at least two of the reasons were, by the time the Constitution was written, the United States was already an awfully pluralistic society when it came to religion. And I don't just mean pluralistic in the sense that you had lots of different Christian denominations. You also already had a pretty healthy Jewish community living in the United States, primarily in Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact, and New York. And the second reason I think why that particular point about religion in the Constitution is given primacy of place is that the Founding Fathers realized that if there's anything that's going to heat people up, it's going to be debate and talk about religion. I think they wanted to make sure that debate really didn't overwhelm or overshadow other important social and political debates, like I think it's tending to do these days in the United States.
I was going to say so. But here's a good start to get an idea of what our country's all about, and the idea is at least a part of the Founding Fathers and Colonial Patriots. The book is Revolutionary Deists, Early America's Rational Infidels. The author is Kerry Walters. He's the William Bittinger Chair of Philosophy at Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. It's published by Prometheus Books. If you're in a car and that doesn't just jump out at you, that word. Just fool around with Google, and you'll get it. Or better yet, go to either Carrie's website. It's carriewalters.net or Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Carrie Walters, thanks for joining me on the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a great pleasure.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
If you think of yourself as a technical person and want to pursue a career in technology, get started by calling ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. Thousands of graduates have launched new careers after attending the ITT Techs nationwide. Classes and day or evening courses meet at convenient times and teach skills used in the workplace. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career services are available for graduates. Make a technology degree program part of who you are. Call ITT Technical Institute for more information. Call right now. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123.
Does your furnace need repair? Does your house need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to top-rated remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. It's easy and it's free. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. You know, this will sound like I'm 110 years old, but when I went to college, it really wasn't very expensive. I went to Michigan State, and then I went to Wayne State University in Detroit as well. And I didn't rack up any big debt or anything like that. It was actually college fees, dormitory fees, all of that was pretty manageable. I think almost all of you know that now college is very expensive, and many of you and many people in your family leave with class family, even afford one student, let alone two. But there's so much more to it, and in this time of these bubbles where there's crisis after crisis, here's one that went right below the radar, and that's the student loan scam. That's the title of a brand new book by Alan Michael Collins. And what is really incredible to me, and I am so anxious to find out about this, its subtitle is The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History and How We Can Fight Back. The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History. Get that. Well, Alan Michael Collins is the founder of the Political Action Committee, StudentLoanJustice.org, and he earned engineering degrees from the University of Southern California. He lives in University Place, Washington, where we're reaching him. He's appeared on 60 Minutes. He's written for lots of papers like the New York Times, the Baltimore Sun. He's quoted regularly in the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Washington Post. And let's welcome him to the Peter Werbe Show. Alan Michael Collins, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello, Peter. Good to be with you.
Well, I bet you have a personal story as to why you got motivated, into this whole idea of this book and why the student loan scam is the most oppressive debt in U.S. history. That boggles the imagination. Give us a personal story to start with us and go from the micro to the macro.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I as you said, I have degrees in engineering from U.S. I had originally borrowed about $38,000 to make it through graduate school, which, believe it or not, is less than average these days. So after graduation, I got a fairly good job at California Institute of Technology as a scientist, but I left that job shortly before September 11th, 2001. So I found myself sort of unemployed, underemployed for about a year and a half. Well, I requested from my lender, who just happened to be Sallie Mae, what's known as a forbearance, which allows you to suspend payments on your loan for a period of time until you can get back on your feet financially. Well, instead of granting me the forbearance, they instead put my loan into default. And from that point on, it's just been a roller coaster of penalties and fees and escalations. you know, about 14 months after I had put in my request for this forbearance, my original, what had begun as an original $38,000 in loans had skyrocketed to over $80,000.
Oh, $80,000. You might as well have done better to have borrowed from the mob.
Oh, well, yeah, you're not kidding. And what really got me was I had been speaking to them. I was like, you know, this is just really almost criminal what you're charging me on these fees. And, I mean, you're really making me tempted to just file for bankruptcy. And I came to find out later that, in fact, student loans are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. In fact, student loans are the only loan in U.S. history to be exempted from standard bankruptcy protections. And so at that point, I decided to do some research into the industry and see what I was dealing with here. And so I spent the next literally 3 years from what began as sort of a personal quest doing research on the industry. And I came to find out enough to write a book about it, which is The Student Loan Scam. Not only are student loans the only loan in our nation's history to be exempted from standard bankruptcy protections, but other basic standard consumer protections that we take for granted with every other type of loan, credit cards, payday loans, they don't exist for student loans. So statutes of limitations don't exist for student loans. The ability to refinance the debt. There may be a lender out there willing to give a better deal on your student loan, but if you've already consolidated, then you are stuck with whatever lender you consolidated with for the life of the loan. Truth in lending requirements have been, again, congressionally legislated away for student loans and only for student loans. So in addition to all these consumer protections that were taken, Congress also gave the industry really draconian and, as you said, mafia-like collection powers for the collection of not only the debt. I mean, there's you know, everybody, when you borrow money, obviously you need to pay it back with interest. But it's these penalties and fees that just exploded, and Congress gave the industry powers to literally seize people's paychecks, their income tax returns, even their Social Security and their disability income, all without a court order. And typically, I mean, this is done full on a very large scale across the country. You know, the borrowers simply have no recourse. There's no negotiation available to the borrowers because all the standard consumer protections that I mentioned had been taken away.
Let me interrupt just for a second here.
Sure.
And ask, is this in part done because there was a low return on these student loans? I mean, because I have to tell you, in honesty, I don't know how it ever resolved itself, but I know a number of people that said, oh, yeah, I owe $15,000. I'm never paying them back. I mean, an extraordinary number of people who would never say that about their house mortgage or their car payment or
right.
Something like that.
Yeah, the premise for sort of tweaking the bankruptcy protections and other protections initially was, yeah, these stories of, you know, students that would graduate from college and very promptly file for bankruptcy on their debt. And this was promulgated by the student loan industry and repeated over and over and over again in the media. And you know, Congress was quick to act and to take away these very basic consumer protections. In hindsight, however, it turned out that the actual story was far different. It turned out that when student loans were fully dischargeable, like every other type of loan, in bankruptcy, in fact, far less than 1% of federally guaranteed loans were discharged through bankruptcy. That's a much better percentage than other types of consumer debt.
And probably says a lot for my friends.
Yeah, you hung out with a bad group there, I think. But no, in fact, this was a crisis that, as one congressman at the time put it, it was a crisis that only existed in the minds of the student loan industry. And
why do they have so much clout? I mean, how are they able to
Such
a stranglehold on Congress? Usually it's about contributions to a re-election or election funds.
Well, it's an interesting story. You know, the Congress created this entity called Sallie Mae back in 1972. This is a quasi-governmental agency, for lack of a better word, that was set up specifically to repurchase student loans from banks to make, you know, banks more, to make it more of a liquid market and encourage banks to lend. Well, and so obviously, you know, Sallie Mae, being a creature of Washington, D.C., had extraordinary influence on Congress. Well, in 1995, Sallie Mae privatized from the government and became a totally for-profit enterprise. But it inherited a lot of the clout that it had, you know, been set up with by the government initially. And then, again, yes, as you said, they certainly wasted no pennies and spared no expense in, you know, lining the congressional coffers of the various candidates that sat on both House and Senate Education Committees and also the Finance Committee and almost every other committee you can think of that has even a remote connection to student loans. It's really quite frightening the amount of money that they have put into Congress.
It's big business. I mean, what's the size of it? What are we talking about? I'm sure it's in billions.
Oh, it's
right?
A huge business. You know, 30, I'm not sure when you went to school, but student loans barely existed back in, you know, let's say the 70s and 60s. Today, as a nation, collectively, we owe about $600 billion in student loan debt.
Really?
Yeah, it's an astonishing number. It's
that's
almost
amazing.
The same size as what we owe as a nation for our credit card debt.
Yeah.
And it's been growing exponentially. And here's another point that I think is very important. And, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of the borrowers who have fallen victim to this predatory system that makes it more profitable for the industry when students fall behind. But actually, I am fighting the fight for not only the borrowers, but also people who never borrowed a dime to go to college, but yet are stuck paying the price of tuition.
And, wait a minute, how's that?
Well, the thing is, this lending industry has caused massive inflation within universities and colleges across the country. In fact, since Sallie Mae was created, the price of tuition has risen at about double the rate of inflation every single year. So today, you know, people that don't borrow, you know, they're paying $30,000-$40,000 for their kids to go to school, you know, private school for 1 year. And, you know, those costs are just astonishing.
Yeah, I don't understand, actually, as I said in the introduction, how a middle-class family can send one, let alone two, kids to college. The prices are just extraordinary.
Yeah, I think at this point it's fair to say that the wheels have pretty much come off the wagon. The universities have abused the power that they had, and they raised the tuition far above what any reasonable, you know, nonprofit enterprise like university should be allowed to raise them at. And not only that, the colleges have fallen prey to the student loan industry. They've become collusive with the industry. In fact, you know, I was on 60 Minutes a couple of years ago, and shortly after that aired, Attorney General Elliot Spitzer of New York, and then his successor Andrew Cuomo launched an investigation into relationships between universities and lenders, and it turned out that there was a vast network of collusion going on between the universities and the lenders, where university financial aid administrators were receiving kickbacks from the student loan companies.
Hmm.
And not only the administrators, but the institutions as well. So it was a very dirty game of pool that the Attorney General uncovered.
It's a terrific, let me just reintroduce you, Alan.
Sure.
It's an appropriate named book, The Student Loan Scam, The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History, and this will definitely keep you listening. And the other part of the subtitle is, and how we can fight back, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes with Alan Michael Collins. This is the Peter Werby Show, and you can go to Alan's website, which is studentloanjustice.org, like if you're getting out of the car or something right now, studentloanjustice.org. There'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. And so you have this situation, though, where people will call the financial aid staff of a university thinking they're going to get help because they want to get their kids in school. The universities want students there, want the children of the family. But they're kind of they don't realize the full game that's going on, do they?
Well, you know, it's really funny you should mention. It turned out that in many instances when students made that phone call to the financial aid office, the person who picked up the phone on the other end was actually an employee of a student loan company. And so, you know, it was very hard to tell where the colleges left off and where the lenders began. And, you know, there's, since that time, there's been some legislation to do away with the most obvious of the transgressions. But even today, you know, we can only expect that there are some very cozy relationships going on. And, it certainly does not serve the interests of the student.
Hey, what happened to you? You said your $38,000 loan had ballooned with interest to $80,000. Has it stopped there? Do you still owe it?
Oh, no, no, no. $80,000 was only, like, shortly, maybe a little more than a year after they had put my loan into default. By 2005, the amount had escalated to well over $100,000. And this, I should note, this is despite my best efforts to deal with whoever was holding my loan through that time period. So I offered to repay the amount that I had originally borrowed, plus the interest that it accrued up until the time of default. So that includes every dollar that the federal government paid for my loan. It includes a boatload of profit for the lenders. And to this point, I've been declined at every step in the way.
So you still owe it?
Yes, that's right. I'm a debtor, just like everybody who will be reading my book, more than likely.
Well,
that's right.
Aren't they going to come after you? I mean, aren't they going to sue you and then garnish you your wages? And
well, you know, it's a funny thing. What happens with student loan debtors is the following. I mean, they largely become – either they pay a hugely increased cost, like double or triple the amount they borrowed, or if they refuse or are unable to pay the massively increased amount, for all intents and purposes, they're sort of forced off the grid. So,
what do you mean? What do you mean forced off the grid?
Well, they can't get a job for any length of time until, you know, either the Department of the Education or the student loan companies come and start garnishing, you know, 25% of their wages.
Have you tried to buy a home in the last few years since you've owed this?
I actually was able to buy a $70,000 home in 2004.
Because oftentimes before they'll grant a mortgage, they...
Well, I did. I wasn't able to go through a conventional bank. I had to get a private loan from a private, from a private citizen.
Okay.
So I was paying, 13% interest on this home mortgage for...
Alan, I'm telling you, I got to introduce you to some mafia guys here. You're going to get better rates for it all.
I'm sure the folks over there can do me a far better deal.
What did you say? I forgot again. Was it $600 billion in student loans outstanding?
That's right. Yeah, $600 billion.
So we're talking about these 800-pound gorillas. Well, there's three of them really in the room right now. One is all the money we're spending on the Iraq war and occupation really just now, and the Afghan war. The other one is the credit card debt. But here we have the student loan, as you call it, the name of your book, the student loan scam, lurking there as well, and as jobs begin to disappear, people are going to not be able to meet their obligation. This is has a real potential for being something that none of us have are even on our radar.
Yeah, you know, that's right, and I'm sorry to throw another log on the fire, but there is a very clear similarity between what happened in the home mortgage industry and what, frankly, has been happening in the student loan industry for years. There's an environment where you have this government guarantee standing behind the loan, and you have the private business community, the lending interests, basically gone wild, heaping as much debt as possible onto these borrowers for these assets. This also is accompanied by huge inflation, as we saw in the home mortgage industry, a very horrible record of oversight on the part of the Department of Education, I guess it would be housing and urban development in the case of the home mortgage industry. So the parallels are just straight down the line. The only difference, though, is that in the home mortgage industry, at the end of the day, the borrowers, you know, if worse comes to worse, well, you know, they can pack up, they can file for bankruptcy, and, you know, they can walk away and get a fresh start. And that's, you know, a horrible outcome, don't get me wrong. But compared to the student loan industry, that's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
In the student loan industry, not only is the misfortunate borrower stuck with, you know, the principal, which I could see maybe, but the loan typically will have exploded to double, triple, or often quadruple, or even more than what was originally borrowed. And so there simply are no options for student loan borrowers. And, you know, it sounds like it, if you don't have student loans, you wouldn't understand. But if you have student loans, particularly defaulted student loans, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
You're talking about, 10 million people. You talk about that in your book, The Student Loan Scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history and how we can fight back. Alan Michael Collins is the author. He's my guest. You can go to studentloanjustice.org. And it's a bummer to owe money and all that, but I don't mean to toss it off like that, because you say in the book, one day at the age of 33, I soberly recognized that my hopes for marriage, children, and a home were much farther away from being realized than they had been when I was 29, solely because of my mushrooming student loan debt. Talk to a lot of people from around the country whose lives have been disrupted or ruined, and even one who became a student loan refugee. Talk a little about yourself. Has any of this been resolved? And tell us about the student loan refugee as well.
And you know, the sort of the emotional state that high levels of inescapable debt can cause to a person are, you know, pretty extreme. I started Student Loan Justice in 2005 and have been, you know, collecting members and stories and so on since then. We've got over 4,000 people in our group now, and we have people who have literally fled the country. In fact, we've got between 2 and 3 dozen people who have fled the country solely as a result of their exploded defaulted student loan debt. We've got people who, you know, I mean, most of the members have suffered a lot of the same, emotional, feelings that I mentioned, in terms of, you know, either being a stress on an existing marriage or being, a preventative force for getting married and having a family and so on and so forth. And in fact, there's a recent study through the U.S. Public Interest Research Groups called Paying Back, Not Giving Back, and it details a lot of consequences that student loan debt is having on our nation as a whole. And among those are people are putting off marriage and children until much later ages as a result of this debt.
Let's do this, though, and I'm sorry to interrupt you from time to time, but I want to make sure that we get, because people would go, whoa, more bad news. This is bad news. The book is Student Loan Scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history. But then the second half of the subtitle, the book by Alan Michael Collins, is And How We Can Fight Back. So let's address that. It sounds like they've got you by the cojones.
Well, you know, they do and they don't. I mean, we have a very strong argument on our side. I mean, there is no other debt instrument, no other type of loan in the nation's history, federally guaranteed or not, to have all the consumer protections that I mentioned removed. Now, Congress did this, and Congress, frankly, shouldn't have done it. And people who are expert in this field and unbiased will acknowledge that there really was no premise for doing this in the first place. And we're seeing the human suffering, truly the human misery that's resulting from this lack of consumer protections. So it should be fairly easy for Congress to simply restore the consumer protections that it took away. You know, that's certainly, it takes a congressional action, but it's certainly within the realm of Congress's power to do. And so clearly, it is time for Congress to end this failed experiment, return standard consumer protections to student loans, and approach the problem from that basis.
Is it on the agenda? Do you have the ear of any congresspeople or senators?
Well, you know, we do. As a matter of fact, we were credited as being the inspiration for what's known as the Student Borrower Bill of Rights. This was created by Hillary Clinton in 2006 and was reintroduced again in 2007. Not only that, I would have to give high credit to Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. He's been besides Senator Kennedy, I'd say Dick Durbin has been among the foremost fighters in Congress for students.
What's the impediment, though? We're talking now. You've talked
about
stuff 2 and 3 years back.
Our Student Borrower Bill of Rights basically languished. It didn't really go anywhere, and I don't think there was really any push behind it in the first place. It was it was more a piece of legislation that was meant to put it, you know, get it out there on the map. Well, Dick Durbin also introduced legislation that would have restored bankruptcy protections for private loans, as did his colleague Danny Davis, both senator and congressman from your neighboring state of Illinois, and those two bills. Well, the first was sort of quietly killed, and certainly the, you know, lobbying freight train that is the student loan industry had a lot to do with that. Danny Davis's amendment, which was very similar to Dick Durbin's, was actually voted down in committee by – sorry, it was voted down on the floor of the House by the Blue Dog Democrats, which – I frankly wasn't too impressed with.
Conservative. Conservative on
Yeah, conservative Democrats. But, you know, when they're taking money from banks, there's just, in my view, that's just wrong. I mean, if you're sitting on a finance committee or you're sitting on an education committee and you're taking money from student loan interests, that frankly is just wrong. But yet, you know, I guess the Blue Dogs apparently have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say that unfortunately we're at the end of our interview. But fortunately, you can go to Alan Michael Collins' website. It's studentloanjustice.org. Alan Michael Collins, his last name is Colinge. The book is The Student Loan Scam, The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History and How We Can Fight Back. CNN Money, just a couple of months ago, said student loans have become the most profitable, uncompetitive, and oppressive type of debt in our nation's history. There's about 5 million federal student loans currently in default. This could be the next bubble to burst. I advise anyone who is in this situation, who is thinking about ever going to college, who has kids that may go to college, get this book, The Student Loan Scam, The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History and How We Can Fight Back by Alan Michael Collins. There'll be a link on my website, peterwerby.com. Thank you so much for being on The Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. Great to be with you.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Why do we go through so much hassle for our morning coffee? We make it, wait in line for it, fuss with cream and sugar. There has to be a faster and easier way to shake the morning buzz. There is. 5-Hour Energy. It's ready right now. No making, waiting, or fussing required. And it really works. Just open it up, knock it back, you're done in seconds. Now that's fast and easy. 5-Hour Energy. The no wait, no hassle way to a great morning. Try it today.
Individual results may vary. See 5hourenergy.com for more details.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
The message that the aliens are broadcasting throughout the entire universe.
Back to the Rock on the Rift.
Rise, go high, we're part of all the planet's dignity.
HD1 Detroit.
Are you guys ready?
Celebrating 40 years of rock. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.